Committee will come to order. First item on the agenda is approving minutes. Lee Baker, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair. I do approve them as presented.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Carries. First bill this morning is House File 1098, Representative Jordan. Welcome to committee. I will make a motion that House File 1098 be laid over for possible inclusion. To your bill, Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Chair Zhang, and good morning, committee members. It's an honor to be here as the author of House File 1098. People with disabilities are disproportionately unemployed and often face barriers to obtaining and retaining employment. I've had the honor of touring and get to know MDI personally in my district and can tell you that the work they're doing is transformational. And I'm so grateful to all the committee members here who have also managed to tour MDI either in my district or on the Iron Range. And MDI has a mission that we've all seen, not just to employ people with disabilities themselves, but to help people with disabilities get jobs in their communities, in our communities, and to help businesses support their employees with disabilities. MDI is developing inclusive job skills training and is supporting businesses to create inclusive environments. This creates opportunities not only for people with disabilities, but for all populations that might be marginalized in their physical or mental capacities or life situations. MDI is also unique in their reach across Minnesota. I've already talked about how they have multiple sites across the state, and they have specifically envisioned their unified work program to reach people across the state, particularly in rural and outstate areas where individuals and businesses may not have access to job skills training. The bill before you is very straightforward. MDI is asking to renew its $450,000 annual appropriation from the Workforce Development Fund to continue its work of providing inclusive employment opportunities to individuals with disabilities and to receive a $1 million one-time appropriation to build out its exciting effort around unified work to bring the lessons they have learned about inclusive workplaces statewide. We talk a lot about how to create inclusive workspaces, not only that represent every individual's unique abilities, but also encourage individuals into the workplace to begin with. I'm excited for you to hear more about this organization. And with me, I'd like to hand it over to the CEO of MDI, Eric Black.
Welcome to committee, sir. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Eric Black. I'm the president and CEO of MDI. I appreciate the time, Mr. Chair, and committee members for the opportunity to speak with you about MDI. MDI is a 59-year-old organization that's been operating to create the best out of individuals that have other abilities. As the representative said, Jordan said, we have a site here in Minneapolis, one in Hibbing, Cohasset, and Grand Rapids, and we employ roughly around about 530 employees. Of those 530 employees, over 200 have a disability. So we've actually created an inclusive employment group that really does thriving work within these operations. We do kitting and packaging. We have a medical division. And we also do various distribution products, totes that service large customers like Amazon, FedEx, DHL, Uline. During this time, we've been able to see how people with disabilities really thrive in work environments. And we've continued to put programming in place that wraps them with everything they need to really express themselves through the soft skills that they have. We've been able to do this and create a social enterprise that really has grown over the years to more than a $30 million organization now. We couldn't do this without your help. The staff that we have there are committed to individuals, and they make things really special. They think about the individual and what they uniquely need. And once you've done that, you really create an environment that really functions. And if you've ever toured MDI, it's really tough to understand or see or identify visually who actually has a disability and who does not, because they're doing phenomenal work all together in one thing. We want to grow this. So one of the things that I've had the opportunity in my previous career is I worked for Cargill for 23 years. And during that time, I did venture investing. I traveled the world handling our innovation and marketing. And I began to see that technology is the way of the future. But you have to have technology in a way that can be delivered, I would say disruptively, but really at a cost-efficient factor. And we've developed that with our STEM box. As we all know, jobs of the future are really growing to be more technical in nature. And we said, if we don't do something, individuals with disabilities will be have further barriers from employment. And so we've created a box over the last year. I'll kind of use this pictorial. This comes with a computer. It comes with microbiological slides, so looking at samples that come from humans as well as leaves and animals. We have our virtual reality, which allows individuals to have an experience before their experience. It comes with a microscope. And we're able to do all of this for about $125. We say nobody else has that capability or has done that. And we're building this on purpose to work for individuals with disabilities. But when it works for people with disabilities, it works for all people, people of other underserved communities across the state. So we think we have something uniquely here, and this is what we want to continue to partner with the state on. Before you in the slides are this type of technology being utilized in some of our current unified work class. There's a picture of me having some joy putting on a circus training class for individuals at our own facility. This is the way of the future, and we want to get in front of this. Not only where we actually employ individuals, but across the state, I think, is the critical part. Another thing that I've been able to do is I'm a member of the Minnesota Chamber Board of Directors. So I've been across the state. I get an opportunity to look at the things that economically affect our businesses and what are their issues that they are facing and how do we operate as a better state to help them grow. Well, one of the things I constantly hear is workforce, 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 as I'm sure many of you do as you talk to your constituents. We've said we believe that MDI has a solution that uniquely helps us help business leaders, and that's by helping them employ individuals with other abilities within their jobs. We know that they're focused on the day-to-day activities, whether it's a retail store, could be a hardware store, could be selling shoes to a pizzeria, but that's their focus. So how do we help them have the capabilities to introduce individuals with other abilities? Well, that's our Unified Work Program. It has two attributes. One of them is on the business side, where we go to businesses, we help them have form an internship program. We do training that helps them remove implicit biases. It helps them focus on individuals' abilities, providing them the things that they need. And it kind of wraps them with their all-around services. This makes it really easy for them to employ people and remove the barriers that they have today that allows them to focus on their business. So now we begin to introduce another group into our workforce that has been disproportionately excluded. Those individuals that go into the workforce, well, they need skills too, right? We talked about some of the science and technology skills that they need, but they also need soft skills. These are the skills that once you're in a work group that allow you to be an effective team member, allows you to express your needs as long as the needs with others that come into play. We talk about accommodations, and a lot of times businesses think those are highly expensive, and we actually find out that the vast majority of accommodations cost nothing, or they cost less than $500, and they benefit all employees within the organization. So Unified Work has a skill development and training course. And this course is something that we've piloted, and we want to continue to do across the state. We had five pilots in our last year that we effectively executed, which we trained over 50 individuals with disabilities to be more effective at communication, understanding mission statements, but overall expressions and the things that need to happen across the state. We've formed partnerships with 9 different service providers, which continues to get us access to other individuals across the state, and we've had a level of success. We did a training down in Rochester with a partner called Maxability. It's a 4-day training, and on the fourth day, we actually toured Mayo. And when we did that, individuals were actually able to see some of the jobs. One of the participants, his name was Drew. He had lost his employment as a lifeguard during COVID and hadn't had employment since. He actually, after going through our training, applied for a job at Mayo and got a job as an endoscopy tech assistant paying more than $20 per hour. In Brainerd, we did something a little bit different. We trained a class of women who had been previously incarcerated, had drug and alcohol addiction in the past, and our goal for them was to have a course that was be your own CEO and develop 1-year goals. One of the participants in that class, it was clear that she was there for the gas card and lunch when class started. By the end of the class, she came up and said, "Why had no one ever told me this before?" So we know that our training and development courses, once again, work for all individuals. So we're excited to get those out across the state. As our Representative Jordan said, you know, we're looking for two things that we think is important. The base 450, that just keeps us going as our MDI and supports the over 200 individuals with disabilities that we have within our four walls. But the $1 million one-time ask is to grow this unified work program to benefit our state. Once again, getting out to a greater Minnesota where people have less access to these types of services, having an opportunity to mail out a $125 STEM box where they can then take online training. We're developing an online learning platform. Also take our virtual classes, which are offered. So we believe with the partnership with the state that we can have an impact that continues to grow our businesses. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Weens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Black, and Representative Jordan. Got me excited about this. Mm-hmm. Boy, what I love is the accountability that you have built into this and that you have a track record. I'm looking at the STEM boxes, the 120, it's 125 bucks a piece, and that's what the $1 million is geared for. That's what I understand. And that will go to all communities or all individuals around the state. It's not just limited to those four sites so that people can link in and do the virtual and do the online stuff. Is there a particular metric or how many, if I did the math, 125 for a million, is there a capacity issue that you have? Do you need to hire some more people to be able to reach? I'd like to hear a little bit more about that, Mr. Black.
Mr. Black.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, you're correct. And with this box, we're looking to get outside of our own four walls and communities as well. We have to continue to develop what I would call the programming that it exists, right? We have our virtual reality, which we have currently a safety training course in virtual reality. We have a job training in light manufacturing, and we also have a interview training. So we have several platforms, but we need to continue to develop those. Our learning management system has to continue to get increased to have more and more programming in it. So there is some background things that continue to happen to make this more and more effective. We're also not an IT company. So one of the things that's prevented us from mailing these out today to everybody is what happens in 3 weeks when the computer doesn't boot up? So we have to do some things around that. The $1 million will also support our mobile academy, so it'll continue to get us out. We've identified about 20 different communities that we believe we can go to in the state, so it'll also go toward our in-person training and development, really most of our community-based program outside our four walls. Of the participants that we talked about and our response rate from surveys, I'll say 42% of those individuals after going through our class actually got employment. So are driven to outcomes. So you'll see both development and advancement of this. You'll see a number of boxes go out. And one of the things that we want to do is we've committed to coming back to the committee with a formal report on the outcomes that we've achieved and where these have actually gotten out to and the success we've had.
Representative Weens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Black, Rep. Jordan. I'm excited about seeing the progress of this, and I'd definitely like to see the brick and mortar site in action and as well as this rollout for your STEM boxes. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Lee Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say good morning again, Eric. It's good to see you. Again, Representative Jordan, this is a great organization. I'm so glad I was led into that great organization here in town. And I don't know if there's 150, 200 people on the plant floor. There was a lot of people. I think Eric knew every single one of them. And they looked to him for that leadership, and the morale was as high as I've ever seen in any place I've ever been to. They are busy. Nobody is sitting around doing anything. They're moving, and they're doing some really great work. So I just want to say thanks. This is a great bill, and this is one of the things that is really helping get our workforce expanded is through work for you. So thank you very much for this. Keep up the good work.
Thanks. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. Yes, please come to MDI. I drive past MDI every day on my way here and think about the great work that MDI is doing. When you think about we desperately need to grow our workforce, and people with disabilities is a big group of people who want to work and can work and be part of our workforce, so making sure that we are developing the ability to include these people in our workforce is something that we can do with this investment. So I hope you will consider this and include it in your omnibus bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. I will renew my motion. The House File 1098 be laid over for possible inclusion. Next is House File 555, another Representative Jordan bill. I will move that House File 555 be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Jordan, to your bill.
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment as well.
I will move the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Vote. Motion carries. The bill is amended. To your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And hello again, committee members. I have another way to grow some of the specific gaps within our workforce through another great organization that I represent, which is Eastside Neighborhood Services. House File 555 is a bill to provide $1 million to fund these workforce projects at Eastside. Half of that would be used for employment programs for both youth and seniors. And the other half would be used to fund the Nursing Assistance Plus program, which would expand the CNA training program. By way of background, Eastside Neighborhood Services is a nonprofit in the Sheridan neighborhood of my district that has served our community for over 100 years. They work to break down economic and social barriers for people of all ages. In addition to the programs I'll be discussing today, Eastside Neighborhood Services also runs a daycare, serves as a site for an alternative high school, maintains a food bank, develops programs for seniors, serves as a place where people vote in my neighborhood. They have a gym, and I could go on and on. They do so much more, and I want you all to know how much they really touch everyone in my district, and their reach does extend to all of yours as well. The two programs we are discussing today are critical to addressing both the shortage of workers and areas where we need workers specifically. We need the youth and seniors that I represent, and they would like to have these training and skills that Eastside provides them to join our workforce. Eastside stands ready to help. We also all desperately know that we need healthcare workers more than we ever have, and in particular, we really, really, really need CNAs. Eastside is ready to step in there as well. And to just talk about exactly how Eastside is serving our community, I have Eastside Neighborhood Services here. And I think we should go to them for testimony, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Paul May Kramer. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for hearing our testimony today on Bill 55. My name is Paul May Kramer. I'm the employment program developer at Eastside Neighborhood Services, and I'm joined here today by some of my colleagues, including Barbara Freeman, who is the Senior Community Service Employment Program a member representing the program, the CSEP program today, whose testimony is in the state is in your packet. CSEP is a 55 and older job training program that serves 170 seniors each year in Hennepin County. We partner with over 50 organizations where seniors receive on-the-job training. We pivoted services during the pandemic where we provided support and training virtually and became a national model for other CSEP projects. This is the only program in Hennepin County that directly supports senior job seekers. But our success is limited. The budget from the Department of Labor allows us to survive, not thrive. The bulk of our $1.2 million budget goes to paying the seniors minimum wage for 20 hours of training a week. CSEP is run by one project director and seven senior staff who are also CSEP participating seniors. They run a payroll of $45,000 a week, $45,000 a pay period. And the Department of Labor is looking for quicker transitions from subsidized to unsubsidized work, and it's nearly impossible due to the staff capacity. Currently, our only method of outreach is word of mouth, which hinders the ability to engage more individuals who would likely benefit from our services. This funding would allow us to hire more staff and meet the DOL's goals, extend our outreach capabilities, engage more seniors in the workforce, and allow us to provide more health and supportive services, including our unique partnership with the LGBTQ community and elders group. Like CSEP, our employment programs need funding to increase staff and provide tailored services to meet the community needs. The Nursing Assistant Plus program addresses the universal shortages of nurses and would provide a more robust medical pipeline. Our proposed model would allow more flexible training to better match the schedules and foster partnership with a focus on equity. We need to get more boots on the ground and engage youth who are not in stable housing and expand our paid internship programs through our WIOA program. Our goal, a goal of our strategic plan is to foster collaboration across programs using an intergenerational approach. This funding would help us fully integrate our CSEP program, youth employment and nursing assistant plus program, providing intergenerational trainings, mentorship, and classes. Thank you for the opportunity to provide background on Eastside's bill.
Discussion. Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I got excited when I saw senior job seeker training. This is exciting. I hadn't heard that before, and I think this is a really kind of a new approach to things. Learning some new skills and so on. I think this is great. That's a great idea. But I do have a question for you, and this is from other days we've seen and heard testimony here in our committee about there's other nonprofits that are actually getting out of the nursing business, and they're having problems with that. I'd like to ask you if you've really understood why they're getting out of it and the struggles that they were having, and why is this right for your organization? Because, again, it sounds great. We need them. But there was a reason some of them were getting out of it. I don't recall that, but just help me understand a bit of the background of your, one of the few that's standing this program up and where others are sort of saying this isn't the best fit for us. So maybe help us with that.
Thank you very much for that inquiry. In my experience, nursing assistants gained popularity in workforce, like as a trend, because it was a certificate that was achievable in a short period of time. And it connected someone to the medical field, a really prestigious field. It's pretty neat to have, to go from not having any certification, maybe not being able to check that box that says some college, and then be able to say that you can check that box, and then you have this nationally, or this, your, the weight of the state is backing this person now. That's really a powerful narrative, and it really looks good in the numbers. And the way that these things have been structured, but however, there's a flaw with that, and that is, even after all of this training, the graduates of these programs go to survival wages. They're not moving into a career, they're moving into the opportunity to form a career, which is really what we're talking about. We're holding on, it's not that we're moving away, and it's not that it's wrong to move away, but we're acknowledging that gap between that narrative of explosive success and the reality. We want to be able to have our microphone here. We want to be able to fill that gap with those supportive services and almost look at it like a fellowship in where you're allowing someone to move into a space and then supporting them until they move into that postdoc, you know, that doctor. The other thing is, traditionally, this has been supported through a cohort model, and that's universal. Everyone, let's get 15 people together. We'll all get on the same schedule, and we'll all go to class at the same time. We'll graduate at the same time, and that doesn't seem to be working anymore. It's too hard to get. The concept of a schedule has kind of shattered in the last few years, and people are doing things virtually. They have new pressures. They have new health pressures. Their families are expanding, and the idea of getting these 15 people together is becoming impossible. That's what everyone in my field is talking about. So what we've been able to do is partner with a number of organizations and support people at an individual and small group level, which is something that people have not been doing. So if someone can only do nights, they come to us and they're ready to make a change in their life. They want to do this, they see the value of it, they're ready to commit this time. We're in a position now to say, what does your schedule look like? As opposed to, I'm sorry, you don't have day availability, you're gonna have to try the next person. Or we'll see you in a few months, when their schedule has completely changed.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't disagree with you. Again, I think there's some challenges ahead for that program, so just make sure you understand that if you happen to be awarded this, and again to Representative Jordan on this, it's something that we should make sure we're diving into, because there's a reason some others are getting out. The scheduling thing is an issue. People don't want to work 24/7 and have that schedule, but we don't have a choice. People need service around the clock. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Zosnikar.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Representative Jordan, for bringing this bill. I wanted to speak to a couple topics. One on the amendment that speaks to readiness for internships, which I'm a big fan of. The age range you speak to is 14 to 24. I think we're going to have to line up some other internship language throughout committees, because when you look at the trades and you look at on-the-job readiness, 16, 17-year-olds in work readiness programs, being able to work in the trades, being able to work in healthcare, I think is, if we don't do that, is short-sighted. So I applaud you for these initiatives, because when I'm going to see trades in the schools, in the public schools, that's what the teachers are saying. We need to be able to get these kids earlier before they graduate so they can be successful. We need to give them pathways for paid internships. So that, I think, is wonderful. On the CNA piece, I think, I wonder your thoughts on if there's limitations for the people you serve with the licensing fee to become a CNA, if you're paying for that, because I know during the pandemic there was initiatives to pay for the CNA course for people, and now that has ended. So I'm hearing feedback that CNAs just can't pay for the they go through the class that could have grants for that, but then there is nothing for the license fee. So I'm wondering your feedback on that.
Mr. Meg Kramer.
Thank you. Budgeted in the bill is the cost of those licensing fees, okay, in addition to essentially an invitation to success, which includes scrubs, it includes everything that you would need to embody this new career path. Additionally, there's money in there for catastrophe support. Someone simply can't get to their training anymore, or their first few months of work, because their car has completely died.
Representative Zosnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for your response. My second, I guess, thought is just the difficulty when I looked at your financials, because I like to look at how things are going, and it looks like from your revenue, from your in-kind donations, look to me like they've went down from 2020. From 2020, they were $1.5 million. They went to about $990,000 in 2021. And then what caught my eye is that a revolving credit line of $250,000. I'm very familiar with that, because the nursing home business and the assisted living business is in a revolving credit line too. So this, the ability for individuals and corporations to give for nonprofits is definitely seeing a change, and the business for-profit companies are suffering too right now. And so with that said, I think the piece that you spoke to of the wage, the CNA, you know, that piece is funded by the bodies here. And if the CNA's 80% of those costs are medical assistance dollars, the facilities cannot, nursing homes have rate equalization, they cannot increase rates anywhere else. So it is this body that has jurisdiction. And so if we don't deal with that piece, the programs you're developing, they exit it. They go work at Walmart. They go work other places. I've seen it for the last, it started long before COVID, and it just finalized it in COVID. But we have to make it, and on top of that, when they come to work, it has to be an atmosphere they want to work in. So I commend you for the things you're doing to develop them on the other skills, because shift work is a different animal and has different responsibilities, and we have to prepare people for this and then have a supportive team to accomplish it, because they need that. The training is a piece of it, but then on-site mentorship with the providers, and when the providers are stressed, there is not that adequate mentorship for a new CNA and a new hire. So I think these programs are going the right direction. I commend you for continuing the CNA and the senior, getting seniors to work, because we need all these people. We have 300 nursing homes and 1,700 assisted livings in Minnesota throughout the state. And so it's a huge need right now. So thank you.
Last question, Representative Sensor Mura.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. I'll be brief. It's not a question. Just wanted to say thank you, Representative Jordan, for bringing this. I'm really familiar with the great work that Eastside does. Really support the CSEP program. I think, has been mentioned, it's a really unique program. We don't see other programs like that that are serving our seniors. I think, you know, we need to be continually thinking about how do we continue to support seniors, and we're having lots of conversations with the legislature about how to do that. But I think a program that is targeting specifically low-income seniors, helping bring them in the community, helping them provide them with job training, is really essential. So thank you for your work.
Closing statement, Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. I want to emphasize that you can, if you put this in your omnibus bill, you can feel good that these programs will work because they're already working. These are existing programs that Eastside Neighborhood Services is doing, and Eastside Neighborhood Services has served all of us for well over a century, and I know that they will continue to do so, and we can help them help us with our workforce issues. And so I hope you will consider their funding in your omnibus bill. And thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. I renew my motion that House File 555, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion. Next bill, House File 2303. Representative Wogelman, I will make a motion that House File 2303 be laid over for possible inclusion. Welcome to the committee, Representative Wogelman, to your bill.
Good morning, Chair Zhang and committee members. I am so excited and grateful for the opportunity to present to you House File 2303, which is a bill to appropriate $463,000 for a grant to the Boys and Girls Club of Central Minnesota. Mr. Chair, members, I'm excited to bring this bill before you because actually this might be one of my favorite bills I presented yet this year, because my family has been able to see firsthand the tremendous impact that the Boys and Girls Club of Central Minnesota has in our community. For the past 11 years, I have trusted the Boys and Girls Club of Central Minnesota to care for my daughters, Lily and Polly, and they have benefited so much from that experience. And Mr. Chair, I want to make sure that other families in our community, that more families in our community, can have the opportunity that my daughters have had to learn, to grow, to become successful people through their experiences with the Boys and Girls Club of Central Minnesota. That's why I'm bringing this bill forward. What the bill does, Mr. Chair and members, of that $463,000, $313,000 of that is to fund a 1 year of free full-service programming for a new program to employ part-time youth development staff and provide community volunteer opportunities for people of all ages. And a significant dimension of this will be career exploration and life skills programming. And then the additional $150,000 is for planning and design for a new multi-use facility for the Boys and Girls Club of Central Minnesota to be located in Waite Park, but available to serve families and people from all over the Central Minnesota region. That's why I'm bringing this bill forward. That's what the bill does. And with that, Mr. Chair, I've got some testifiers who are here to provide more information on what this appropriation would go to. And then, of course, we'll be more than happy to answer any of your or the members of your committee's questions that you may have. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Oh, thank you. Hi, my name is Deb Nevesis. I work with the Boys and Girls Clubs of Central Minnesota, and we're so excited about this bill as well. Waite Park is a community within the greater St. Cloud community. We have services right now in St. Cloud. We do serve Waite Park youth at three of our Boys and Girls Clubs, our free programs in St. Cloud, and also some of our child care, after school child care programs in the community, but nothing specifically in Waite Park. And we have a lot of kids in that district. There's about over 2,000 kids that need services there. They can get busing from their schools sometimes to our other clubs, not all the time, so there isn't consistent transportation to get them to our existing clubs. So we need something in that neighborhood. So, and it's not just Boys and Girls Clubs. We need senior activities in the area as well, volunteer opportunities. So this is a collaborative with the Boys and Girls Clubs of Central Minnesota, the City of Waite Park, the Waite Park Police Department, the Greater St. Cloud Public Safety Foundation, and Stearns County. So our ultimate mission, and it's kind of addressed in this bill, is to build a full-service Boys and Girls Club and Senior Center in Waite Park, relatively close to the schools where kids can walk without having to cross major roadways, which is an issue in the Waite Park community. So, but that takes a little bit of time. We found some locations. We've got some potentials for some in-kind donations of land, but we're looking at a $3 to $5 million project. So we can't raise that money overnight. Obviously, we've started the process of a capital campaign working with all of these partners, and we're really feeling positive about that. But what we're seeing is that so many of these kids don't have the services they need right now. Waite Park, according to their police chief, who is deeply involved in this project, has a substantial issue with sex trafficking, drug usage, a considerate lack of positive activities for youth, and then a tremendous amount of behavioral mental health calls in the community. So positive programming is needed immediately, and that's what this bill would address. We would start a new Boys and Girls Club in partnership with District 742, which is our area school district. In the St. Cloud community, they're going to give us in-kind space in the Discovery Community School, which is actually an elementary school, which is great. And we have a really good partnership with them. And that's the other thing I wanted to highlight is all of the partners here, these aren't people we just newly pulled together. These are people that we've worked with for a long time. And that's why we feel really confident that we can get this project built. But so we're going to, in the short term, be working in Discovery Elementary School, starting this summer, partnering with the PAL program through the Waite Park Police Department to provide services. This program is going to serve kids 5 through graduation from high school. And in the St. Cloud community, we have a high immigrant, new-to-country population. High school graduation does not mean 18 in the St. Cloud community. It can mean up to age 21. So we're going to be providing these programs, meals, workforce development, academic success, in an elementary school, which is going to be really good in the short term. But serving high school seniors in a school that's built for little kids is not going to be perfect. And that's why we feel really confident that because of the need, we'll be able to achieve our goal in acquiring or building a new facility as well. So thank you for the opportunity. I'm really happy to answer any questions that you have about this program.
Discussion. Representative Wings.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Wolgamont. And ma'am, I didn't catch your name.
Deb Nemesis.
Ms. Nemesis. I'm really encouraged by this, that it's really a community project. And it's a lot of, there's public money, of course, but the private donations, business community, and how you brought all the different partners together. I'm encouraged by that, and that it's a bipartisan bill. A friend of mine in the Senate is carrying it there, Senator House. So I will support this. I am curious about if there's a goal of how many, you know, I'm a metrics guy. So with the space that you will build out, what number of students and youth do you think? And I'm also encouraged that there's seniors. So yes. If you can give me an idea of how many people that you intend to serve.
Yeah, absolutely. We're looking at about a 30,000.
Go ahead.
We're looking at about a 30,000 square foot facility, which is similar in size to a building that we already own and program out of our Southside Boys and Girls Club. We can serve at that facility 300 kids a night. On average right now, sort of building back from the pandemic, we're serving 150 on a high night, 200 kids. So we'll have plenty of capacity. And because this is going to be multi-generational programming with seniors and youth, seniors during the day, youth after school, and then some overlap, we're really excited that we can be serving up to 100 seniors in the facility as well.
Representative Wings.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Bolton. Thank you.
Representative Oscar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Wolgamott. I'm very familiar with the Boys and Girls Club and have always been a big fan of it. I always like to look at the board of directors, and it sounds like this area of the state has a very strong business presence and community presence to bring something forward like this. I wondered if you could talk a little bit about how you see this program's financial health right now.
Ms. Nemesis.
Of course. Are you talking about this specific program or Boys and Girls Club in general?
In general.
Ms. Nemesis.
Of course. Thank you. Actually, we are in fairly good shape right now financially. The pandemic years we expected would be sort of the end of fundraising. So our Boys and Girls Club, we have two different pieces. We have a fee-based program, which is our Kid Stop program. For families that can afford it, if they can't, we have a very robust scholarship fund to make sure that kids who need the program are able to get it. We've also been able to access some state dollars to keep those programs running. It's been very difficult throughout the pandemic, so we've used some of the stabilization grants and financial hardship grants to keep those programs going. Our fundraising, it hasn't been as difficult as we expected. Our donors in our community are very invested in the Boys and Girls Club. We've been around for nearly 50 years in our community, have a really good track record, have a lot of partners, so what we can't provide, we find a partner to provide provided in our program. So we have been very lucky in the fact that we have been able to run at a slight deficit for the last couple of years, but because we had been careful planners the last probably 25 years, we did have reserves to help us. So we are in a relatively good financial shape right now and comfortable with it.
Representative Lenascar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for that response. So do you have an endowment right now? Can you tell me how much you have in your reserve?
Yes, we do have an endowment fund right now. We had a donor a number of years ago who gave a really significant contribution, a $3 million endowment fund. Now, it's been a difficult year, obviously, in the market, but we do have some reserve dollars that we're using to run the clubs.
Representative Zelisnicker, last question.
Thank you, Chair. And I ask that because this committee has a lot of asks. So I want to, you know, this is extremely valuable programming. Just want to know what the financial state of the union is for this program specifically, not questioning its merit at all, just looking at that broader question of financial status of where it's at right now. So thank you very much, and thank you for all you do. It's a fabulous thing to do for the community and the kids. Thanks. And seniors.
Closing statement, Representative Wolgamott.
Well, thank you again, Chair Zhang, and members of the committee for the opportunity to present House File 2303. While this is a one-time appropriation, investing in the Boys and Girls Club of Central Minnesota with this appropriation will benefit students and seniors and families in Central Minnesota for a lifetime. Thank you for the opportunity to present, and I urge your full consideration for House File 2303 in your finance omnibus bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members.
I will renew my motion that House File 2303 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. Next is House File 2194, Representative Agbaje. Is she here? We'll go to the next bill, Representative Vermeer, House File 1573. Representative Zamora will move that House File 1573 be laid over for possible inclusion. Welcome to committee, Representative Zamora, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Zhang, Vice Chair Brand, and members of the committee. I want to thank you for the opportunity to present House File 1573. 1573 renews the workforce appropriations of $300,000 a year that the YMCA of the North has received in the last biennium. I want to start today with talking about one of my favorite proverbs, which is, if the youth are not initiated into the village, they will burn it down just to feel its warmth. I know that Representative Hassan has come before the committee before and talked about the need for youth programs, youth employment programs, specifically in Minneapolis, due to just the increase in antisocial behavior that we've seen from our youth, and the need to really make sure that we are, as a community, wrapping our arms around our young people, providing them with skills, bringing them into the workforce, and making sure that they can be successful. I see no one who is better prepared to do that than the YMCA, which has longstanding relationships with young people and families. The YMCA is the largest youth employer in the state through camps, childcare, aquatics, youth development programs, and more. Previous workforce appropriations have been used on the Wise Career Pathways program that provides job skills and career readiness and internship program that serves youth ages 14 to 24. The YMCA of the North is deeply committed to equity and inclusion. To that end, this appropriation has been focused on partnering with youth from underserved communities to connect them to early employment on a path to careers and in high demand fields. Funds have been previously used for program staffing, youth internship wages, as well as other expenses to address barriers to employment, such as transportation. I'm respectfully asking that this bill gets continued to be considered for inclusion in the omnibus bill, and I have a testifier here today to talk about the great things that the YMCA of the North does for Minnesota. And I would now like to turn it over to a former participant. The testifier today is Ethan. Thank you, Ethan, for being here.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Ethan Balikalaba.
Go ahead and proceed, Mr. Balikalaba.
Thank you, Chair. So I just came here today to talk about my experience with the Y. I've been with the Y in various programs for about 7 years now, but specifically in this Career Pathways internship, I've been in it for about 3 years. And in that time, I've been able to develop specifically like job skills, like how to work with others, how to learn about yourself. But the part that I like about it the most is that like through this pathway, you're able to learn the soft skills that they don't necessarily prepare you for in school for jobs. It's a way for like teens like me and other people, like specifically from like these underrepresented groups that don't really have people to lead us or show us how to properly function in a work setting, we have a way to like experience a little bit of it, have a taste through these different, what's it called, through these different skills and these different jobs that we do. Like say like camp counselor or aquatics or working at the front desk. By being in this internship and having the ability to actually earn wage and actually work with other people who know what they're doing and have somebody to mentor you and guide you as you like try to navigate into like adulthood really helps. And I find that it's been a big part in shaping who I am as a person due to like the trainings that we get. Because over the summer, while you're working, every Friday you go down to the building, the main office building, and we train. We work on different things. We learn about how credit works. We learn how to be a better worker. We learn about our personalities so that way we can mesh well with others. And we learn a bunch of different other stuff that helps us be better adults. So thank you.
Thank you. Discussion. Representative Fraser.
Thank you, Senator Moore, for bringing this bill. I used to be on an advisory board for the North Y a long time ago. When the focus was on just youth and enrichment. And I will say I often talk about the fact that there were programs like this when I was growing up on the south side of Chicago that are the reason I'm sitting here today. Without those programs, without the engagement, I love what you cited at the beginning, that proverb, without that engagement and integrating and wrapping our arms around me in the community, I wouldn't be here right now. So thank you for bringing this program, and I hope we can provide resources for it because it's vital and it's important for our communities. Thank you.
Representative Brand.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say quickly, when you mentioned camp counselors, it just dawned on me. Back in the day when I was younger, I actually worked as a camp counselor at YMCA Camp Denord, way up north in Ely. And so I'm happy to support the bill. I've already got my name on the bill, but I think that the mission and what it gets accomplished is really important. And so thanks a lot for being here today.
Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Rep. Sensenmora, for this bill. There is an African prophet that says it takes a village to raise a child. Our young people need guidance. They need support. They need all the help they can get so they can become productive members of society and contributing members of society. So either we help them now with all they need, or we help them a lifetime. We don't want to help them a lifetime. We want them to grow up and be part of our economy and contribute to society. So it's programs like this and many other programs who are working with young people that you know, shed a light on what hope looks like. So thank you for this, Bill.
Closing statement, Representative Sensenmura.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. Thank you, committee members. And thank you, Ethan, for testifying. I think a lot of what you said really illustrates the beautiful work that this program does, and I hope that we can include it in the omnibus. Thank you.
Representative Sensenmura will renew her motion on House File 1573, related to her possible inclusion. House File 2194, I saw Representative Badger is here, so we will go back to that bill. House File, I will renew the House File 2194, be laid over for possible inclusion. Welcome to the committee, Representative Badger, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. So I'm here to present House File 2194 that is seeking $1 million to provide job training and placement for those who need it. The funds would be used to support Black Women's Wealth Alliance programming, and that's a program that supports Black women seeking to become entrepreneurs, homeowners, or continue their education, all for the purposes of building wealth for their families and communities. Black Women's Wealth Alliance is a group that has been around since 2014 with the purpose of helping Black women improve their economic and financial situation. The BWWA has worked with entrepreneurs to get their businesses off the ground and help them succeed. Yet businesses also need skilled employees. And BWWA seeks to support this to provide culturally affirming trainings and resources to women seeking to improve their economic lives by learning skills for a job and eventually moving into a career. I'm joined today by the founder and CEO of BWWA, Kenyon McKnight Ahad, who can talk more about the importance of this work.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. McKnight. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Kenya McKnight Ahad, founder and CEO of the Black Women's Wealth Alliance. The work we do really uplifts the core financial provider in the Black community, which is Black women. And as you may know, 80% of African American Black women are the primary breadwinners of their household. But that is not equally met with opportunity to really sustain and care for their household, which makes our work essential to uplifting their economic aspirations to build wealth. In that, we've served nearly over 4,500 Black women across the state. We are located in North Minneapolis. That's where we grew. That's where we're from. And that's who we primarily serve. But we do have a base of women that come to our programming from St. Paul, Brooklyn Center, and some areas in the suburban places in Minnesota. In that, what we strive to do is this, is to help these women take control of their financial futures by providing them with wealth education through a cultural lens, with the specific purpose of building wealth by which they identify. That's really important for us to be able to manage the resources we have, but position ourselves to build stronger futures as entrepreneurs, as workers, as mothers and caregivers of not only our households, but our families. Some of the businesses we work with are in the startup and mid stages, where they've been in business for a while, but they need to grow skills to further operationalize their companies that will grow workforce opportunities within our community. In that, we also have women who are aspiring to be homeowners. We've trained over 200 Black women across the state to acquire their first-time homeownership, certifications, and at least 45 of them have obtained homeownership in the last 3 years of that work that we've done. In that, we've also support Black women who are striving to improve their career, relations, and opportunities through our Ms. CEO training that provides them with what I call the fundamentals of ACT, administrative communication and technology skills that would help them not only increase their value proposition in the workplace, but to improve their ability to be hired for higher roles because of the skills that they know and how they work within the system of their the jobs, be it corporations. We strive to get them into the middle, management roles.
As you may know, at least 35% of black women in Minnesota jobs are concentrated in low-wage occupations. And so our goal is to grow that to middle and higher occupations that would allow them to earn a good quality of life to care for their families. As mostly what maybe 50% of black children are born under poverty. So part of how we solve this problem is by taking care of its primary caregiver, which is black women. And that's why we're doing the work we do. The resources that you give us will help us grow our capacity to serve more black women. The demand is often greater than our capacity because, as you may know, again, most of the population in the African-American community is primarily female. And we are the only black women-owned, led, and focused institution in the state of Minnesota. We're not a program. We're an entire institution. And because of that, the demand for who we are even expands to greater Minnesota, which we don't have the current capacity to serve. But this funding will help us do more. We're proud of the work that we have done, which also extends to black girls, right? Because they're proud to see their mothers in these spaces and mothers who want to see their girls have a stronger opportunity than they did at their ages. So your resources to us will help grow our opportunity to serve more women by including more staff on our team, but also to support the continued operations of our programs. I think that is it. No, stop.
Discussion. Seeing no discussion, closing statement, Representative Bakke.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. Thank you to the committee. I hope that you all will look favorably on this as you put your bill together, and thank you for your support and time today.
All right, I will renew my motion that House File 2194 be laid over for possible inclusion. Next is House File 1939, Representative Spencer Muir. Representative Spencer Muir will move that House File 1939 be laid over for possible inclusion. I believe you have an amendment. What was it? You want a DE1 amendment?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Zhang. The DE amendment makes some changes to the bill based on conversations with stakeholders, some conversations with the chair, conversations with Dolly. I think the most significant thing it does is it brings the appropriation down from $10 million to $1 million in the first mill. $1 million in the first year and $2.5 million in the second year. It also takes out some of the pre-apprenticeship language based on conversations with Dolly to ensure that we could, you know, partner with the program if they already have rather than, you know, kind of seek to replace any program they might have.
All those in favor of the DE1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment is adopted to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair Zhang, Vice Chair Brand, and members of the committee for hearing House File 1939 today. So the clean economy workforce in Minnesota is growing. According to Clean Energy Economy Minnesota, nearly 58,000 Minnesotans worked in energy efficiency and clean energy in 2021. The biggest sector of the Minnesota clean energy industry is energy efficiency, representing almost 73% of the state's clean energy workforce. So we know that the state and federal government have taken actions to accelerate the clean energy transition, and this will only accelerate the growth in our clean energy economy sectors. The Federal Inflation Reduction Act is estimated to make $370 billion in climate investments over the next 10 years. And as we all know, last month, Minnesota took another major step toward a clean economy when our legislature passed and the governor signed into law the bill to reach 100% clean energy in Minnesota by 100% carbon-free electricity by 2040. Minnesota's transition to a clean economy is an opportunity to create a more equitable economy. There was a recent op-ed from Minnesota Foundation leaders in the Star Tribune that stated, "We know the real work lies ahead, particularly to ensure that all Minnesotans, especially those most impacted, are included in and will benefit from the transition of our economy to create a more just and abundant future where we all can thrive." So we can look to other Midwest states as examples for how to do this. Illinois recently committed over $40 million in investments in equitable workforce development career pathways to support their state's clean energy transition. HF 1939 puts equity at the center of the clean energy workforce transition in our state. It creates a new grant program to support organizations with the skills, ambition, and strong networks within communities of color to develop and implement green workforce readiness programs. These funds would help prepare individuals for careers in construction, clean energy, and energy efficiency by supporting workforce training, career development, employment placement, and culturally appropriate job readiness. HF 1939 would expand the field of workforce training providers by supporting new entrants into the field. And the bill would ensure that high-quality training pathways are developed by encouraging partnerships with registered apprenticeship programs. The Minnesota Climate Action Framework, released in September of last year, issued a clear call for investment in workforce training to support the clean economy transition with a focus on communities of color and indigenous communities. The report further calls for specific actions, including increasing the number of apprentices in the construction trades, registered apprenticeship programs, and the percentages of people of color and women who enroll in and complete these programs. HF 39 responds to this call for equity and puts communities of color at the center of the clean economy transition in Minnesota, and I hope that we can include this in the omnibus. I would like to now turn it over to my testifier, Dr. Kate Knuth.
Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Dr. Kate Knuth, Managing and Research Director of the 100% Campaign. The 100% Campaign is a cross-sector, statewide, multiracial, intersectional campaign to build an equitable and clean climate and clean energy future that works for everyone in Minnesota. We have nearly 60 organizational endorsers to date. And I'm here to support House Bill 1939, a bill that invests in a clean economy, equitable workforce development program. Last month, as the representative said, Minnesota passed the 100% clean energy bill, committing us to carbon-free electricity by 2040. Governor Walz's climate action framework commits Minnesota to an economy-wide carbon-neutral economy by 2050. Both of these commitments will require a whole lot of work and workers to achieve. According to the recent report by the Clean Energy Economy Minnesota, nearly 58,000 Minnesotans go to work in the clean energy economy currently, and this number continues to grow every year. I think of making the transition to an equitable clean energy and climate resilient future as a puzzle. We need to put together the policy commitments and the funding and financing to make the transition happen. With the passage of 100% clean energy, we have a huge piece of the puzzle. Even more, the bill contained really important equity commitments to make sure the energy transition is equitable. The significant federal investments in the Inflation Reduction Act and the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act mean we have even more pieces of the puzzle in place, and these federal investments also prioritize equity. On top of the federal investments, if Minnesota passes investments in a state competitiveness fund and Climate Innovation Finance Authority this year, we'll go even further toward having the finance and investment parts of the puzzle in place. But here's the thing, as I said before, this transition will take a lot of work and workers. We need to build the workforce part of the clean energy transition puzzle, and that is what House File 1939 helps to do. It will help us build the clean energy workforce and do so in ways that build equity by prioritizing groups historically left out of workforce development and prioritizing partnerships, which will enable pathways not just into jobs, but into better paying union jobs that are more likely to come with family-sustaining wages and benefits. Building pathways for Black, Indigenous, Brown, and new American communities into family-sustaining clean energy careers is essential for making sure our clean energy transition is equitable. It's the right thing to do. It is also necessary if we're going to reach our clean energy goals and commitments. We need more Minnesotans to join the workforce to make this clean energy transition happen. Simply put, there's so much work to do. We need everyone to step up and join the workforce. For example, a recent study by the Center for Energy and the Environment found that to weatherize and electrify all 1 to 4 unit residential buildings in the city of Minneapolis, it would take a workforce of at least 1,000 people to do so. That workforce does not yet fully exist. And this is one part in one city, albeit the biggest city in our state, of the puzzle we need to create to build the workforce to make the clean energy transition happen. If we don't make sure that more Minnesotans, particularly Black, Brown, Indigenous, and new American Minnesotans, have the opportunity to join the workforce of the clean energy and climate transition, all of Minnesota will be worse off. We will fall short of our clean energy and climate commitments. I ask that you support House File 1939, and I'm grateful to the author and the many folks in our community working to make this important policy happen. Please support it, and I hope you will include it in your omnibus bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Discussion. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess I might have a few questions, and maybe Deed has to come down and answer a few of them too, because maybe Representative, has this idea been floated through the legislature before? I mean, we've had clean energy ideas, you know, solar community gardens. We've got, you know, Made in Minnesota, the solar program. We've had a lot of investments in Minnesota jobs for, I want to say, at least 10 years. And I'm wondering, this is coming at a time when we're trying to build up something kind of new, I think, and so correct me if I'm wrong, but it appears it's extremely sliced out with anybody who wants to work in the field, unless, you know, it may not include everybody. So if you want to include, let's say, whites as well, does that pose a problem for this? And so just the history of maybe where this is going to go and how you envision this, and again, maybe it requires Dee to come up here and give us an explanation about how they've envisioned this as well. So I'd like to hear some of that.
Representative.
Yeah, thank you, Lead Baker, for the question. You know, as someone new to the legislature, I might not be the best person to ask about the history of these kind of bills. You know, I think the intent from this specific program and why we are really focused on communities of color and indigenous communities is that they have not received the funding from DEED in the past to do this kind of work. And so I think that's why we also in the bill specifically talk about trying to prioritize, you know, new entrants into the field. You know, this is really focused on, we have a lot of community organizations that I think have been really, you know, dedicated to climate justice work, that have really been dedicated to organizing in the community. And they now see a really, you know, large opportunity, large opening with some of our climate policies to get into the workforce development space that they have not been in before. So I think that's why it's focused specifically on communities of color and indigenous communities. I think it would be, you know, we should have, like, as, you know, Dr. Kate Knut said, we have 1,000 jobs that we need filled. You know, I think that there's a lot of room for lots of people to get into those jobs. I don't know about the other kind of programs that DEED has that are not specifically focused on these communities, but I do see a reason why we need a specific program that does focus on these communities. Thank you.
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, again, and maybe if Dr. Knut knows this question, otherwise I will ask somebody from DEED to come down and answer this. Again, we've had a number of industries in Minnesota working already in this field. Do we have background information about how much have we reached out to those communities of color now to encourage them to come in and get very well-paying jobs in this field? What's triggering it today that hasn't triggered it the last several years, I guess? And again, if this is an unfair question, maybe Deed can share us what they've done before too, to try to understand how bad is it, and how do we know that you know, the BIPOC community isn't being reached into, and I just want to know how big this problem is. I've never heard of this before, and I want to really understand this better.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Baker. I can't speak to DEED specifically, but I can speak to some of the groups and folks behind the need for this bill, and their community organizations and leaders made up of and led by people of color and indigenous people in the state of Minnesota. And they are not seeing the access to the workforce training and the pathways into not just jobs, but careers in this really expanding field of clean energy transition. And so I'm following the lead of the communities this will serve and saying that this is a gap that currently exists and needs to be filled if we're gonna have the equitable clean energy transition happen. And frankly, I would say the clean energy transition happen more broadly, because we don't yet have the workers and workforce needed to make the transition happen.
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, could I have somebody from DEED come down? I have a question for them.
Welcome to committee, Ms. Dannon. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Darielle Dannon. I'm the Government Relations Director at DEED. Happy to
happy to attempt to answer your questions, Representative Baker.
Thank you so much. And again, maybe you can give us a little background, Ms. Dannon, how has DEED in the past worked out to try to be involved with either other nonprofits or community organizers that they're looking for today that has tried to get folks into this area? Do you think this is a good fit for DEED to try to, you know, kind of dive into the specific, really, the clean energy sector? Because you're very broad based on this. I'm just, any background on DEED's programs to date when it comes to reaching out to the BIPOC community for this type of a field?
Ms. Dannon.
Representative Baker, Chair Zhang, Representative Baker, thanks for the question. So I'm going to answer. So we do at DEED have a project that folks may have seen in the paper that's rolled out. It's a partnership with Excel, and it is looking to train folks. It's in the energy space. So Excel has identified that they do have a shortage of workers in their pipeline. A lot of that shortage does come from folks who are non-white. So folks who might not initially think of going into the fields that they're looking to hire a workforce from. So we do have some experience. That's our first partnership here. I will note on, we do have a number of items, and I think we'll be in front of this committee probably in the next week or two, talking about the governor's budget recommendations. In those recommendations, we have identified kind of in two places in our workforce proposals. One where we're proposing that we focus our workforce efforts on what we call the sort of five main industries where we've identified high demand and high wages. Those industries do encompass the industries discussed in this bill. So they're not quite as specific as specifically clean energy, but it does include the construction or trades. It does include kind of, we do agree that there is a demand and a need to kind of upskill. And just like Excel has noted in this partnership, there is just a pipeline challenge sometimes for future workforce as well. So we have identified some similar demands. We don't have, obviously, we don't have, or maybe not obviously, we don't have a request just like this. I will note that we do have some similar requests at some partner agencies as well. So Department of Commerce has done in the past some weatherization work. You may remember that from prior time at the legislature, mm-hmm. and they have some requests at this legislative session as well. Similarly with the Department of Labor and Industry, who typically they take on the apprenticeship work. We do some pre-apprenticeship at DEED, but we don't do apprenticeship work directly with our trades. And so they've got some requests in a similar space in their budget as well. So hopefully that's a little bit helpful. You know, we work alongside many other agencies as we think about work. Solving workforce challenges. I will note as just a note that I brought down partially my computer because I am personally looking at, there's a report that you may have seen in the Star Tribune talking about economic inequalities among Minnesota's cultural groups. And I happened to be reading that while you were asking the question. And I do find there's a lot of information there. Giving me just a second here to just note that, you know, I do find it really interesting. It's talking about a number of cultural groups with very, very low incomes and some of the reasons for that inequality, including challenges to reaching jobs. So I think our agency is very, very concerned about that, as well as, of course, there's other things called out in the report. Sorry. Just point of personal privilege, I guess, even though I'm not on the floor, but just wanted to shout that out for this group if you haven't read that yet.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to understand where that pinch point is. We've been trying to get workforce in this field for a number of years, and have we failed then to you know, what will this bill do if it's passed? Because it's a lot of money, $3.5 million to focus in on our BIPOC community to try to get them into the energy sector and the clean energy specifically. I almost find it almost too drill down. Because we should have been doing it already. Because I think if there's a problem, then what's that problem? We got to get to that already, and that's something that DEED should be doing with their already. I think their funding in many ways. So I just want to maybe better understand this bill, Mr. Chair. If this is going to move forward, you know, I'd like to support something like this. I can't today, but I just want to understand how we can, you know, find where is the problem now. I don't quite understand that. I think we. Our advertising, we're social media, we're doing everything we can to bring people into the field, but if it's certain specific training and we're not getting it to the communities of color, where are we missing that? Because it shouldn't just be this industry either, but this is a lot of money for a very specific thing, and if it's just because of the 100% carbon free, and if it's just, I think it's really getting narrowly focused on what Deed should be doing on a more broad base. I think that's kind of my only concerns on this, and I'd like to learn more about this. So I hope that we can find that at some point, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Baker. I would love to have follow-up conversations with you about this, you know, and I think you say that it's drilled down. I mean, as you can see, originally it was asking for a larger appropriation, right? And we saw that Illinois, who passed similar climate legislation, is investing $40 million into this, right? So, you know, I think this could be a start. I think that there is room to do further investments. I think, you know, what the data shows us is two things, right? That we need more workers to be able to accomplish the goals that we have around climate justice, and that people of color and indigenous people are not represented currently in those fields. So I think to solve that problem, we're going to need a lot of stakeholders. We're going to need to do a lot of work. I see this bill as, you know, pretty narrow on a specific issue, which I think kind of relates to my last bill. We're talking about, you know, the YMCA is a trusted partner to youth and families, and thus is great at kind of, you know, bringing youth into employment. I see this as a similar way this grant program would fund organizations that already have deep ties in the community that maybe are not part of the clean energy sector. And I think, you know, a lot of us are aware that the clean energy sector is not a sector that a lot of people of color and indigenous people can see themselves in, right? So to move into those sectors, to make the moves that we know people are going to need, sometimes they need that helping hand, that trusted organization. These are organizations that are not currently in that kind of workforce development, but maybe see the opportunity, want to develop programs. So I agree with you. Something right now and kind of the pathway that we have to getting the workers we need is broken. And I see, you know, let's bring in the organizations that know these communities best to help us solve that problem. That's kind of the very narrow, I think, work that this bill is trying to do, but happy to have further conversations with you.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Smith Moore, for bringing this bill. I think it's a great step, and I think it's a proactive step. It wasn't surprising to me that the study that was mentioned that shows those disparities. I mean, in Minnesota, we know all the time. We see these rankings where we're ranked in the top five in places to live, top five in the place to get education. But then we drill down, and we always see great disparities. And along those disparities, BIPOC people always seem to fall in those disparities. Now, it is not happenstance. It is a historical thing. And I agree with Representative Baker that we should be trying to get at the root cause of that and make sure that it doesn't happen. But the fact of the matter is we have not done that. This is a bill. This is a program. This funding would go a ways toward doing it for the energy sector. It is something we need to do in many of our sectors all across the state, because that's why we have the disparities we have. So I'm encouraged by seeing this. I'm looking forward to investing in it. I hope we can invest in this. I think it's a good start. It's great what Illinois is doing. I think more states are going to start to do it. And also another fact of the matter is that we have to look at our demographics. Our demographics are shifting. When you look at our school-aged children, look at who those students are. That is the future of our state. And we have to plan appropriately for the future of our state. And to do so, we must invest in the future of our state. So this is important. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Representative Hassan. Nope. Okay. Closing statement.
I think, members, for the discussion today, I think, you know, with the climate policies that we are enacting and will need to enact in the future, we need to be simultaneously thinking about workforce and how do we bring people into that workforce. I see this bill as just kind of the start of some of those conversations, but the data speaks for itself. And I think the need that we have around, you know, climate policies and new industries, new jobs also speaks for itself. So look forward to continued conversation, and I hope we can include this in the omnibus bill. Thank you.
Representative Samira will renew her motion that House Bill 1939 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion. Members, we will recess until 6 p.m. If you can't make it tonight, please inform our CA. Hope you are able to grab dinner and come back fully energized.
We'll be in this room.
Yeah. We'll be meeting in this room again. Recess. Committee is in recess. The House Workforce Committee will come to order. First bill on the agenda is House File 2664, Representative Hassan. Chair Hassan will move that House File 2664 be laid over for possible inclusion. Welcome back to the committee, Chair Hassan, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 2664
is the Twin Cities Rise, appropriating money for Twin Cities Rise Empowerment Institute. As you guys know, Twin Cities Rise has a strong track record and support from the legislator, both sides of the aisle. It has been around for over 20 years with offices in St. Paul and Minneapolis. Twin Cities Rise is the only group that does pay for performance training programs operating under MS 116J-8747. Under the terms of that law, community organizations that provide workforce training are reimbursed by the state only if they adhere to certain standards and meet certain benchmarks. This bill is different from the bill that we heard a week ago. And this one is, $500,000 for fiscal year 2024 and $500,000 for fiscal year 2025. And it increases the capacity of Twin Cities Rise to do their empowerment institute through employer partnership across this Minnesota and expansion of the youth personal empowerment curriculum. With that, Mr. Chair, I have a wonderful testifier who will further explain this bill and why we need this funding.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Zhang and Representative Hodanasan and members of the committee. Thank you for your support for Twin Cities Rise. My name is Emma Corey, and I'm the president and CEO of Twin Cities Rise, a jewel of a nonprofit in the heart of North Minneapolis. We have been serving the community for 30 years and focusing on disconnected individuals by providing career training, personal empowerment, and successfully bringing them into the workforce. Today I am here to request your support for our Empowerment Institute, a division of Twin Cities Rise. The key to our success is our signature personal empowerment training. This proprietary training program focuses on social and emotional behavioral interventions, well beyond standard skills or basic knowledge acquisition. Nearly 25 years ago, we decided with client demand to start providing this empowerment to employers, to businesses, for retention of the workforce and building of the workforce. Today, the two specific requests are to expand this impactful program, to bring our training to employers and businesses to strengthen the workforce within the state of Minnesota. We hope to do this in the Twin Cities and first expand it to St. Cloud and then to a few other locations that have a strong population that we focus on. Our series of emotional intelligence workshops will elevate employee engagement and increase employee retention for our employers and businesses. To expand, and the second one is to expand our opportunity youth programs. At the heart of our community is our young people, and they have suffered the most during this pandemic. When we think about mental and emotional stress, we have been doing personal empowerment for 18 plus for 30 years. We are asking for your support today to be able to build out our curriculum for those under 18. So that we can become the best youth training provider of social and emotional learning. Both requests are for capacity building to elevate our successful workforce within the state by doing two things, focusing on retention and engagement of our employees, and two, to empower our youth, our future workforce, with the right skills that employers need. With that, I know we are tight on time. I am keeping to my 2 minutes. I will stop there. And thank you so much, Chair Zhang and Representative Hassan, for your support and members of the committee.
Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Representative Hassan, and for the testifier. I just wanted to ask, I don't have any questions on what the program is doing. I just wanted to ask, because I like to look at when we're doing grants or appropriations, what the financials, it looks like the income, which I dropped from 2021 to 2022, but what I was looking at is the piece of And I don't know what the benchmark is for the management and the general salaries or that expense, but it looks like from 2021, that went up from 17% of the total expenditures to 19% in 2022 at a time when the income went down. So I was just wondering if you could talk about that, because that would seem an inverse of what I'm used to seeing in business when we would retract. And so I just wanted to ask that because I thought you would be able to maybe walk through that.
Representative Son.
I'll just phone a friend, Mr. Chair. So
Absolutely. Thank you, Representative Zelenikar. Happy to answer that question. Twin Cities Rise is a small nonprofit, but it's an organization that has really prided itself on accountability, as you can see from our pay for performance. I came on board about a year ago, and what we have done at Twin Cities Rise is really made sure that we have a strong back office that can support our programming and our reporting. What I added was a staff person in our finance area that can do an excellent job of our reporting to deed and our ability to have a clean audit every single year. Nonprofits for the longest time have stripped their back office, and we hurt because of that. That is one thing that I feel is strong at Twin Cities Rise, always will be under my leadership. And when it comes to our amounts going down, the pandemic has been a year when you have a pandemic and you have the situation we had, and we have record unemployment, education and training are certainly on the lower end. We have continued to serve during this time in terms of transforming the trajectory of people's lives. I can stand behind that, and we continue to do that every day. Thank you for your support.
Representative Scar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the information. So this is just a question, and as you move forward, is this an appropriation? Do you see this as being this 24 and 25 year period, or is this something that you see as is ongoing?
I see
Ms. Corey.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. Thank you, Representative Hassan. Thank you, Representative Zelenikar. I see this as a capacity building grant for Twin Cities Rise to be able to build the youth curriculum and to begin to provide the employer outreach in at least one greater Minnesota city, and that is St. Cloud. In the future, if we do come back, it would be for us to be able to grow this impactful program in areas like Rochester, Worthington, Duluth. So it would be about growing it beyond the Twin Cities.
Representative Zelenikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you. My assumption is that the financial person that you added to your team for this salary increase in your expenditures is then going to allow you to have the reporting that you need to report back to this legislative body on outcomes and financial benefit for the investment of the state.
Ms. Corey.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. Absolutely.
Further discussion. Closing statement.
This is a good bill. Please support. Thank you for your time.
Chair Zhang will renew her motion. House File 2664 will be laid over possible inclusion. Next is House File 1236, Representative Erin Cago. I will move that House File 1236 be laid over for possible inclusion. Welcome to the committee, Representative Cago, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1236 is the Getting to Work bill, and this is a grant program at DEED that helps connect workers to jobs by addressing transportation barriers. Getting to Work supports nonprofit organizations that offer low-interest auto loans or leases, affordable car repairs, or donated vehicles to low-income individuals who need a car to get to work. Being in jobs and hearing a baby really brings me back. Just like flashbacks. Anyway, sorry. The legislature established the Getting to Work program in 2017 and made one-time appropriation to the program in 2017 and in 2021. And this bill appropriates, it gets a base funding for the Getting to Work grants program because transportation challenges for low-income families are not going away anytime soon. And we know that helping people with transportation, they need to get to work, benefits the whole community. This program, I kind of have a little bit of a soft spot for it because I used to work at one of the organizations that administered this program. And so got to see the folks that came in and paid their car payments every month and built the community around us. So it was really good. And so I'm really excited to have our testifier with us. Latoya Whitefield received a vehicle loan through the car ownership program, the CAPRW, the one that I used to work for. And she has made time to come here and testify today to make sure that other families have access to the same kind of support that helped her family. So I will turn it over to my testifier.
Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good evening. My name is Latoya Whitefield, and I'm currently a clerk for Ramsey County. I also serve on the board of directors for Community Action Partnership of Ramsey and Washington County. I'm a mother of three children, 17, 14, and 4, and we reside in Ramsey County. My vehicle is used to get myself back and forth to work. I have two jobs, and while one is hybrid, my part-time job is servicing clients in the community face-to-face, which is one reason I need a reliable vehicle. Since my household has one adult, I'm responsible for transporting my children everywhere, from school functions, such as choir, band practices, and concerts, to driving my eldest daughter to Target to get her favorite mascara. I also volunteer in the nursery at my church at least one Sunday a month, so having a reliable vehicle to live my daily life has been a huge blessing and privilege. Before I applied, I had a vehicle that was not reliable and kept having issues that were getting more and more expensive to fix, so I decided to let that vehicle go. I hadn't had a car for around 2 to 3 months before I learned about this program. I was able to use my sister and her husband's extra vehicle, so not only was being a participant in the car ownership program a blessing for myself, but for my family. The application process was super easy to navigate. Once I submitted the application, I then had to complete and pass the financial literacy course that was a part of the requirement. And about 3 to 4 weeks after that, I received an approval letter. Financially, I had to budget in not only my car note, but also having insurance was a requirement. I have been able to keep up with my payments on my car note and insurance. And I'm thankful that the car ownership program has not penalized me when there has been times that I've been late. And also it's helping me to build my credit score. This program works because it provides a low interest loan with flexible payments for people who don't have the means to have a lump sum of money to purchase their vehicle. I am now in a position to help others. And being a recipient of this program is a huge stress reliever. So I hope you continue to fund this program. Thank you for your opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Whitfield, for sharing your story. Discussion. Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Representative, and thank you for being here to tell your story. I think it's a fabulous program. I wanted to ask the Representative your thoughts on this grant money, how the distribution would be. It looks to me when I was looking at the prior time, it was 64% went to Greater Minnesota, and then the rest of the grant money in the prior application went to the outside 7-county metro. And so I looked at where the grant money went as far as it was basically southwest, southeast, metro, and then Duluth. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are on if there's going to be other counties, if this was to move forward, if there's going to be other counties, because rural Minnesota there just is no transportation. And so I wondered your thoughts on how this distribution would be. The need is there for many people in the state. And so if you could talk to that would be great.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I think that's the reason why that we're asking for a larger sum of money this time is because we really do want to make sure that we're able to replicate these programs in other parts of the state. When I first worked at Community Action, we only had the car loans, and now they also are able to offer repair services as well. And so with the success of this program, I think that's exactly the goal behind this, is to make sure that we get it out into areas of the state that don't have access to this program right now.
Representative Salazar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative. Is there specific language in the bill that will speak to the percentage that will be Metro 7 County or Greater Minnesota?
Representative Cagle.
I don't see any, just with a quick glance of the language, I don't see anything, but I'm sure Deed would be able to answer some of those questions because they're the ones that are administering the grants.
Representative Zaskar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative. My ask would be that we follow the language that I see was done prior, where 65% or a percentage of this would be for Greater Minnesota, this application of this. That would be included in an amendment or considered?
Is that a question?
Yes. Thank you.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, this bill is in the possession of your committee, so you guys can do
it's
with it.
It's being laid over.
Yep.
Representative Senator Muir.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Cagle, for bringing this bill. I didn't know about this program. I think it's a great program. Also, you and I, Representative Cagle, are on the Transportation Committee together, so I know that we both are trying to think about different ways of transit. Is there a similar program that you know of for maybe providing people with, you know, money for public transportation or money to buy a bike or just kind of ways to incentivize other ways people might get to work, or is that something that could be potentially added to this program? Thank you.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I know that Met Council has some programs that offer discount cards and card services. And I even know that some nonprofits hand them out to participants. I know that's something that we also did at CAPRW. But I'm not sure if there is a program specifically like that, but I bet you I know somebody who would want to work on that.
Thank you.
Representative Senator Muir.
Yeah, thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Cagle. I thank you for this bill. I think it's, you know, transportation is crucial. Whether it's just getting your daily needs of food and whatever, or getting to work. And I'm just kind of wondering on the about 2.6 through about 2.23, you know, talking about those that are eligible to apply, you know, kind of wondering, like independent mechanics, you know, sometimes they will, you know, help somebody out, you know, getting, and so is that, I'm just kind of help me understand this, is that somebody, you know, if somebody's car were to break down that would qualify for repairs, you know, an independent mechanic, would they be able to basically apply and say, hey, we can get some of this repair covered? Is that the intent of this?
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you go down to 216, that does list independent local mechanics and automobile repair facilities. I think that's more about for that. Is it where the participant gets the money and they can go to the independent cut? And I can also phone a friend down here if you want to get more clarity.
Yeah, sure.
Welcome, committee. Please identify yourself for record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Anna Odegaard. I'm the director of the Minnesota Asset Building Coalition. We've been working with Representative Cagle on this bill. one of the things I really like about this program is that it gives discretion to the individual programs as long as they're meeting some basic parameters to design a program that meets the needs of their community.
the application of the deed requires that they describe how they're partnering with people in their community. So I think over on the independent car or the independent mechanics, some of these programs basically they partner with mechanics in the community. So if they take in a donated vehicle, they can get free or discounted repairs, which both gets, you know, allows them to make, stretch the dollars, and also just allows folks in the community to give back to their community and make sure folks have reliable transportation. So part of the application is describing to Deed how they're kind of leveraging these dollars to partner with people like garages or auto dealers in the community.
Representative Nelson.
Yeah, thank you. That's really helps clarify that. And, you know, I think, you know, there's a lot of great, whether it's mechanics or vocational schools that are doing similar things already, but I think, you know, helping with community partners is important. So thank you.
Closing statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Like I said, this bill has a little bit of a soft spot in my heart because I've seen the folks who utilize this program, and I just think it's awesome. And I think that everybody in the state should have access to this. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kago. I will renew my motion and House File 1236 be laid over for possible inclusion. Next is House File 1025, Representative Smith. The chair will renew his motion that House File 1025 be laid over for possible inclusion in honor of this bill. Welcome to committee, Representative Smith, to your bill.
Yeah, thank you so much. excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Rochester, Minnesota is the preeminent medical community in the entire world. And as any community that wants to stay on top, we have to be innovative and always seeking to improve. And so with this Bridges to Healthcare program, what we are recognizing as a medical community is that there's a lot of marginalized communities that we have not mined the incredible talent and innovation that is there. And we want to tap that incredible potential. And we also recognize that many of the systems that led us to not be able to give these people a place in our workforce is not something that's going to change overnight. And so this wonderful program came together to help students and those who wouldn't normally be able to find an incredible career in the healthcare field to find that in Rochester, Minnesota. And it's an incredible program. If you look at this handout in your packets, you will see an incredibly successful program. You can see there on the bottom, 135% is our ROI on this program. So just off the top, it's a great investment. But I think more important than being a great investment is the number of people that this serves. 1,000 people have been enrolled since 2013, 326 individuals hired at local long-term and regional facilities. This is a program that is working, and we come to this committee asking for more funding so that we can continue to make sure that this works. And I already probably talked more than I should have, but I brought a great testifier that I'll hand it over to now, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this evening. My name is Ginny Rittman, and I'm the Executive Director for Workforce Development Incorporated and the Workforce Development Board of Southeast Minnesota. WDI is a nonprofit organization providing employment and training programs to the 10-county area in Southeast Minnesota. Excuse me. WDI serves as the fiscal agent and the administrative agency for this nationally recognized program, which includes a number of private and public partners, including Rochester Community and Technical College, Riverland Community College, Mayo Clinic, Hawthorne Education Center, and of course, WDI. WDI and the Workforce Development Board also serve as the convener, joining partners together and serving as the liaison between career seekers and opportunities. In May 2017, Bridges to Healthcare was recognized as a finalist in the Innovations in American Government Awards by Harvard University. More recently, in February 2021, Bridges to Healthcare was recognized as an adult educator innovator in Bridge Programs, Advancing Innovation in Adult Education, as awarded by the U.S. Department of Education. The state is a key partner in this project, and we also have private support and funding. Our program started in 2011 and has grown over the years to include other partners and funders. Most recently, we have received state funding through direct appropriation dollars since 2017, serving the Olmsted County area. In 2019, we started discussions on expanding the program to other parts of our region because it was time to increase our impact throughout the region and because of the recommendations of this committee. We are proud to say that since that time, we have since succeeded in this with current programming available in Freeborn, Maurer, Steele, and Olmsted counties. We come before you today with the roadmap designed and ready to implement for additional expansion to Rice, Goodhue, and Winona counties. In addition, we have a need for serving more students in our existing programming, with students waiting to be able to access these opportunities. We have also expanded our career offerings from a project that started by training just CNAs to now offering pathways in several other careers, such as phlebotomy and pharmacy tech. Our overall project costs with expansion efforts proposed would total just over $1 million. We've secured project partner and other funding totaling $225,000 per year, or approximately 24% of our budget. Our cost per student remains less than $3,200 compared to typical training average of over $5,000, and our return on investment again is 135%. Increasing equity is also vital to our state workforce programs. The Bridges program has an 80% ethnically diverse workforce hiring rate, which is an incredibly high for a program in Southeast Minnesota. In addition, 60% of those hires are going to support vastly understaffed long-term care facilities. What we are asking you to support today is helping us further build a sustainable workforce program that serves as a win-win-win opportunity, as we like to call it. It's a win by supporting individuals to economic security with livable wages and benefits. It's a win by helping meet the workforce talent needs and increasing equity in our community, all while expanding the tax revenue and lowering the cost of public supports, making it a win for our economy. This program truly is a perfect trifecta, supporting targeted populations entering the workforce, supporting private business and filling their workforce needs, and also increasing equity and the overall economic vitality of the region. We're thankful to Representative Smith and our authors for their support of this great program and the opportunity to speak with you today. And while we weren't able to have a student join us today in person, I do have a student success story from one of our graduates, if you'd like to hear, but I know we are crunched on time.
Do you guys want to hear a story?
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
Okay. Jawahira moved to the United States from Kenya in 2016, where she had attended a religious high school and focused a career on early childhood education. She enrolled at Hawthorne Education Center immediately to work on her English, as she spoke very little upon arriving. She worked hard, and while raising four kids and volunteering at the Islamic Center teaching children, she eventually began her CNA training. Jawahira has always stressed the importance of education to those around her, and especially to the children she interacts with at home and while volunteering. She has shown to be a great example of this, and as she has faced numerous setbacks, but has persevered through them all and did not give up. After needing to come back to take the state course after a break, she came back on her second try and passed with flying colors. She refuses to give up and will continue to put all of her energy towards her goals and believes strongly in making her family proud. After passing her test, she decided to continue her education and apply for phlebotomy. She then decided to continue her education, complete her paperwork, including transcript translations and evaluations, using our resources to properly transcribe her for the application. Then, after practicing her interviewing skills, she was able to pass her interview panel and gain a seat in the phlebotomy cohort for the spring of 23. She plans to utilize the services provided by the Bridges to Healthcare program continuously through her training. When asked how her life would be different without Bridges, she laughed, as if she could not imagine her life without the program. She said she would still be working at Walmart, and she repeats that she feels very lucky without the program. Without the program and the help she would have received since joining up through the Bridges program, she would be lost. She reminded me of the four times she had to be driven to her CNA exam in Red Wing from Rochester at 6:30 a.m., and that this would have not been possible without the help from Bridges to Careers. The meetings and assistance for homework, applications, translations, and now on to immunizations and background checks, she will continue to use our services. She says she feels the support has been so consistent and integral to her success, and she cannot even begin to express her thanks. She looks forward to the phlebotomy program at the Mayo Clinic School of Health Sciences and feels confident that with our support, she will be successful and soon have a career in healthcare that she and her family can be proud of.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank you again.
Discussion. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the Bridges program, I know this looks like it's kind of specific to healthcare. You've got a really good story, obviously, in the Rochester Clinic and such. Are they, how are they, and maybe I missed part of this earlier, how are they partnered with you to kind of almost kind of take in this funnel of employees? Are they helping support it either with some equipment, or are they engaged in this as well? Does it go to also other healthcare clinics in the area too, so we get more employers involved? I'm just kind of curious how the employer side is also helping this partnership work.
Ms. Rittman.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative, thank you for the question. So Mayo Clinic is one of our key employer partners. They do fund part of the program, so they are part of our private funding to that 24% that I spoke to earlier. They are also part of our leadership group. So, you know, every single week we have communication with our leadership group, part of the interviewing process for new candidates, part of the interviewing process into employment. And then, as I mentioned earlier, 60% of our hires are actually going into other long-term care facilities. I don't have the exact number off the top of my head. It's somewhere around 30-some employers that we are serving through this, too. And Mayo Clinic is actually very committed to that. They want to make sure that we're also supporting other businesses throughout the Rochester, well, throughout the Southeast Minnesota area now, because those long-term care facilities are also just as critical to our success.
Mr. Representative Baker.
Real quick, just to follow up, thank you. And again, I just know as an employer myself that didn't have any kind of a program to try to reach out to the language barriers that we had at our hotels. Again, I just want to make sure we're not forgetting about the smaller clinics, the smaller, folks that don't have sort of the larger systems in place. They really want to hire folks, but they don't know how to communicate with them, especially when they're English language challenged, right? And that's why I just want to make sure that those partners at the table also are being thought of, and but employers need some training too. How is the best way to do that? Because we don't have the answers, and when we don't know, we sometimes don't know how to ask. So I just appreciate, love the program. I think it sounds like a really good thing. But I just know that sometimes they need to be reached out as well. So thank you for that.
Ms. Rittman.
Yes, thank you for that comment, and we will continue to move forward with even expanding our employer outreach as well.
Thank you.
Closing remarks, Representative Smith.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sure as I'm talking to a whole bunch of representatives, you've had this experience where you are elected and you find out about a program, or you find out about people in your district who are doing something amazing, and you're just proud of your area. And I'll be honest, with this program, I'm proud of my area. I think this is a wonderful thing. I love how holistic it is. It offers education, yes. Does it help with language barriers? Yes. Does it help with transportation if needed? Yes. It really is people-centered and a way to work at a problem in, again, a very holistic way. So I'm very happy to bring this to you. Thank you for listening, and please fund us in your omnibus.
Thank you, Representative Smith. I will renew my motion that House File 1025 be laid over for possible inclusion. Next is House File 813, Representative Hicks. And I see that you have an A2 amendment. Is that correct, Representative Hicks?
That is correct.
Can you explain the amendment, and then we'll vote on it?
Yes, thank you. The amendment incorporates feedback from our last committee stop. I see some of our friends from that last committee stop here with us today. First, it requires that the vendor used for development of the public awareness campaign to be a Minnesota-based vendor. And the second, on line 4.25, it changes the two to May, clarifying that the mediums listed in the bill to the areas around the public awareness campaign may not be all that is able to be used. Yeah, should the vendor make a difference?
Those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Smith, to your bill as amended. Representative.
I mean, I know we hang
Hicks.
Out a lot.
We're in the same area.
We are in the same area. Mm-hmm. A block away.
I'm looking at a list here, so.
Before you today is House File 813, a bill brought forward by ARM, the Trade Association of Residential Disability Waiver Service Providers. This bill does two things. The first is to provide recruitment and retention bonuses for every one of the 30,000 direct support professionals working. And also to incentivize another 13,000 individuals to join the workforce. Second, the bill provides $4 million in appropriation to DEED to develop and implement a multi-pronged public awareness campaign aimed at bringing new employees into the caring profession.
For the purposes of this committee, we'll focus on our testimony about the public awareness campaign for the bill and the appropriation to deed. We've heard from our constituents and in many committees about the catastrophic impact the workforce shortage is having on our caring professions. Supporting people with disabilities and seniors and children with disabilities across all long-term care continuums. We know that these facilities are closing. People living on their own are left without services for long periods of time, and employment services have growing wait lists due to the workforce shortage. This is having a ripple effect through the continuum of services and forcing people into more expensive, more challenging services. Our hospitals are overflowing, and individuals that do not need hospital level of care but simply have nowhere to be discharged to. We cannot continue to ignore this issue. Direct support professionals and other caring professions have unbelievably difficult jobs. They administer medications, they help with money management, they provide transportation, crisis intervention, and they support people with some of their most intimate care needs. Direct support professionals are there for the people they support during the hard and the scary times of their life, but also through the joy-filled times and celebratory moments. The vacancy rate in direct support professionals is the highest in the state, with over 30%. This impacts the direct support professionals who don't leave by requiring them to work extra shifts to help wherever they are needed. As a state, we need to shine a light on these critical jobs and support people with disabilities and older adults and seniors. The time is now to raise the profile of how important and amazing this work can be, how rewarding these professions are. We are proposing that through a statewide public awareness campaign, we can do just that. Talk to any DSP, and they will tell you that they do this work because of the amazing people they have the opportunity to support every day. Let's share those stories. Let's work together to make sure that everyone across Minnesota knows what great opportunities there are to make a meaningful difference in the life of other Minnesotans. With that, I will turn it over to my testifier to share a little bit more information about the positive impact this bill will have.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Sue Shuttle, and I am the CEO of ARM. ARM members provide residential services to people with disabilities through the four disability waivers. We support people living in many different settings, from community residential settings, most commonly referred to as group homes, to people's own home or family home, to people living in intermediate care facilities. While each service is different and each home is very unique, they have one thing in common, unfortunately, and that is every service is on the verge of collapse, and because we don't have enough staff to support the people that we're serving. There was a time that when someone who worked in disability services made about the same hourly rate as someone working in retail or fast food or the hospitality industry, but that's just not the case anymore, and I know you know that. The wages offered to people working in disability services has simply not kept up. Yet the work remains incredibly rewarding, life-changing even, not only for the individuals working in the field, but also for the person being served. Many people working in the field, including Representative Hicks, has said that it's the most rewarding and most important profession out there, and I don't disagree. So I won't talk very much about the $43 million because I think we're focusing in on the other issue, but as Representative Hicks has said, there are two things that this bill does. One is the $43 million retention and recruitment bonuses, but the second part of the bill contains language that allocates $4 million to DEED to work with stakeholders in launching a multi-year, multifaceted public awareness campaign. Our goal is simple. We aim to attract workers into the caring professions, which includes aging, disability services, and behavioral health. So it's not just about our sector. We're looking at the full spectrum of the caring professions. We're modeling this after a similar campaign that has launched in Ohio, and we plan to highlight the caring professions by telling impactful stories in a variety of ways and mediums, including television, billboards, digital, mobile ads, YouTube, social media, all the things that you would think that you would do in a public awareness campaign. You've heard over and over in various settings that our caring professions in Minnesota are experiencing severe workforce challenges. That's not new to you, I know. Providers continue to use all of the tools in their toolbox. They're, you know, they're using Indeed. They're doing all the things that they need to get the word out about the profession, but it's really not enough. What we are proposing with this appropriation is to take it up a few notches, make the caring profession something that people hear about on multiple platforms and often, and can envision themselves participating in it as a career. Our ultimate goal in having a broad-based campaign like this is to heighten the awareness of the caring professions and attract new workers into the various health and human service positions. The proposal calls for Deed to convene stakeholders, as well as work with a creative service company to develop the right concept and to zero in on the right platforms. Our initial idea for content includes focusing on recent high school grads, a mom or a dad going back to work, a fast food delivery driver. And through the PSA, you can actually get a sense that they're looking for more meaningful career that makes an impact on someone's life. So we need to draw back the curtain and show why a career in the caring professions is rewarding, fulfilling, and something that is deeply appreciated. With that, I want to thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Ms. Soto. Discussion, Representative Senator Muro.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Hicks, for bringing this bill. I know we're not supposed to, we're not focused today on the incentive fund grants, but I think that that's a huge part of it. And I would say, you know, I would worry about doing this campaign without those grants, right? Because I think that we, if we're going to say that these are good paying jobs or people and that people should go into the profession, then we actually have to have that be true. And so thank you for taking care of that with the first part of the bill. I guess my question is, I think you said that this was kind of, I think, based off a program in Ohio. Like, what has the impact in, and I guess why choose the method of marketing versus other outreach methods, recruiting, training? Like, I guess, can you talk a little bit why you think really focusing on the messaging or the narrative piece is really key to getting more folks into the profession? Thank you.
Thank you so much for the question.
Ms. Shuttle.
Oh,
Representative Hicks.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Thank you so much for the question. I will start, and then I will we'll turn it over for the details about the Ohio component. So I was a DSP for 19 years. I started in the field when I was 16 years old. And I started by accident. I fell into it. And many people in this field fall into it. But when I started, it was a true career path. It was seen as more than just a job. And as time has gone on and as people with disabilities and seniors, caregivers for those folks haven't been seen as a profession. It hasn't been given the same respect or, frankly, even the same community awareness that it exists. That working in a group home or working in a nursing home is a profession. And so part of the goal behind the public awareness is simply to make sure that our next generation of workers know about this valuable and amazing profession and career path that they have the option to choose. But I'll let my testifiers speak a little bit about Ohio.
Ms. Soto.
So Ohio launched their program about a year ago. And so they're in the midst of it now, and we actually met with them and are learning from the things that they didn't do that they wish they would have. They wish they would have asked for additional resources. They wish that they would have done more in the social media platforms because what they early indicators on things like they advertised on like Pandora or, you know, things like that where they never really thought that that would be a thing that people would, you know, follow through on and actually click the link or follow the website to find out where is a position that they can look at. So they don't have, you know, they don't have all of their metrics in to tell us how well their campaign has launched or how it's been, but we know that we've learned a lot from what they have told us. And quite frankly, you know, we've been disability services in particular. I'll just talk about that, but I would say it's applicable to caring professions. We haven't really done anything like this before, and to bring the issue out or the opportunity out from the shadows and to really talk about the impact that the caring professions make on people with disabilities, people in assisted living, nursing homes, et cetera. I mean, I think that we need to focus in on that. That's a different way of talking about this, but it's something that I think is really desperately needed if we're really trying to help solve the workforce problem, because it's not going to go away, and this is just another tool that we can utilize.
Representative Centemura.
Thank you for that. I would just say, as you're developing the program, I know that there has been some similar work done, and I think Chair Hazan would know more about this, but around recruiting teachers in Minnesota and trying to use marketing and kind of narrative, and so that might be a place to look to for that. I think it's called the Come Teach in Minnesota program.
Thank you. Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, I'm just kind of curious, so how are we going to, I don't know if this is maybe to Representative Hicks, how are we going to know if this is going to work? What's our matrix? How are we going to know if this was successful?
Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much for the question. There will be people in the positions. I mean, that's the goal, right? Like, the goal is that we will do this marketing and we will see more applications. We will see more people clicking the links. We will see more people coming to the job applications. We will see more applicants applying for these positions. And I want to be clear, you've sat in some of the other committees, so you know, but for those of you that maybe aren't in some of the other committees, this is a puzzle piece of solutions. There isn't one solution. This is one small puzzle piece of all of the broader bills that are part of these solutions, including some of the rate things and all those like broader conversations that we're having. But if young people don't know that these caring professions are out there and that they are both rewarding and career paths and valuable, then they're not going to apply for them. And so trying to get where those workers are and where they're hearing those messages and try to instill in them the same, for lack of a better word, passion for supporting their fellow Minnesotans that so many of those of us in these caring professions already have is the ultimate goal. And so there aren't any metrics worked into the bill specifically, but since we will be using a Minnesota-based marketing company, DEED will have metrics in their grant allocation like they do for all grants.
Representative Baker.
Thank you. I think, again, I've always said when you have new ideas coming and it's out-of-the-box thinking, let's try something. I just want to make sure that this is a lot of money, and it's something in a very important industry. There's a lot of important industries, too, that are going to look to this to say, well, where did we get to? So if we are at a 80% occupancy now for those empty vacancy jobs, we have to start doing this, or we shouldn't be doing this. We have to know these numbers before we launch something like this. So I just want to make sure we have those. The matrix is in place to be able to look back at it. Did it do anything good? And just, again, to have it, there's more people in the jobs or there's more people applying for it, that's okay. But what does that mean and how does it work? It's a lot of money for an out-of-the-box idea. I really want to focus on reimbursements. I want to focus on things that we all, I know, agree with, and less forced mandates. But this is one that's a big outside-the-box kind of a thinking thing. So if we do this, I just want to make sure we have a way to look back and say, that was a great idea, or that we should never do that again. I just want to make sure we're honest about that so that we can do it right, because people expect us to pay attention to these things. So, but thank you for thinking of things. This is great. I mean, but it's got to work. And we need to be held accountable for this. So this is on all of us. So I appreciate the thoughts. Thank you.
Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Hicks. I mean, you know that I have a passion for this. My big reservation right now, I missed the $43 million part on this, you know, when I signed on. And my question now, and which may change my position here, but that isn't my question. I'm very concerned when I look at
the 43 million just concerns me in the sense that the intent is to do grants, if I understand this right, for the disability community-based, for the caregiver. And it would be $1,000 per employee. So when I look at from the sense of running operations for my entire life, that's like 50 cents an hour. So that's where my hesitation is. I'm not against the concept of what this is. I feel that with the limited resources we have, even though we have $20 billion with the amount of million-dollar programs that we all listen to every day, multi-million, the first thing is getting the horse, and we have to pay the people. Because as much as you're right about meaningful and campaign for meaningful, I've interviewed in pilot projects enough young teens and young 20-year-olds in college and asked directly why they're not in the field. And it is money. So the fact is they're like, look, it's great. I care. But I also have to pay my bills like you do. I also have to pay my rent. I have to have gas in a car that's went up. I have to eat and buy groceries. And so that's really why they're at Walmart. Many of them left because it's wages. They have to have a fair, if we pay the people, and that's why I would like to see the horse done first with that $43 million moving that way, and then if we do campaigning for the $4 million, I would support that. But we absolutely have to get the wages first, because otherwise it will become gimmicky, and the aides already know that they care, but they're not coming back till the wages are matched what the work is. When I was an aide, the wages matched it, and McDonald's didn't exist. They probably did. I don't remember. I didn't go. We didn't have one in my hometown. But the wages people could make did not match what I made as a CNA. So people chose that. It was esteemed. And until we fix that piece, I think this is premature on that part. I'm not against it. I love anything that incentivizes people. But I just worry about that piece of it. And the wage piece is so critical right now for disability, for PCAs, for CNAs. And so with all due respect, that's just my perspective. I just wanted to share that because I feel like we have to get the horse 100% right now. And without the horse, the carts are just going to be supplemental, and it's going to derail. So, but I really appreciate your intention and your thoughtfulness. Those are just my concerns from 40 years of doing this and watching shift work and watching that people have to be paid, you know, a fair rate, because this, every type of thing and initiative, when you look at 1,700 nursing home or assisted livings and 300 nursing homes, and I don't know the number of employees, and then you add the disability profession and the people in the various settings that those you serve are in, it's a monumental amount of employees. And so it would end up being 50 cents an hour for that type of program, even though it's 43 million, and that worries me. But thank you.
Closing remarks, Representative Hicks.
Thank you. I would really like to respond to that, however, before I do closing remarks. So there is, you know, the 999 and then the clone bill about the DWRS rates, which includes the elder care. And so I would really, you know, I'm carrying the clone bill for that, and I would love more support because I agree with you. I agree with you 110%. If we do not fix the rates, nothing else we do will matter. I agree with you. And as you also know, I'm carrying the PCA rate bill as well. I agree with you in all care structures. All of those things are necessary. But we can do hard things, and we can do more than one hard thing at a time. We can work to fix the rates and increase the overall floor to ensure that our care providers and to ensure that Minnesota's checkbook reflects our values in the rates and in the daily wages, but we can also say thank you and invite others to the table. We can do more than one hard thing at a time, and I am committed to doing that, and I am committed to continuing to bring up more than one solution, and I am committed to thinking about all the different puzzle pieces and trying to put them together, because there is not one solution to this problem. If there was, we would have done it. This is a group of really smart people. If there was one way to do this and one solution and one magic bullet, we would have done it. But there isn't.
And so we have to work by putting multiple puzzle pieces together. We have to try out-of-the-box things and known things. We have to work together, and we have to collaborate to try to solve this problem for our most vulnerable Minnesotans. And so I really, really appreciate everyone's time this late evening about this bill and about the other committees that we've heard it in, and about all of the bills that we're working on together to try to solve this problem, both for our most vulnerable Minnesotans and for the workers. And so I want to say thank you to all of you, because I know how hard of a lift this has been. For those of you that are on Human Services Policy, Human Services Finance, Children and Families, you know, any of those committees where we are talking about these populations, this is really hard work. And there is a lot of complicated puzzle pieces, but I know that if we work together and put people, our most vulnerable people, first, and have our checkbook walk our values, we can get there. So, thank you,
Representative Hicks. I will renew my motion, House Bill 813, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion. Next bill, another Representative Hicks bill, House Bill 1042. Through your bill.
Thank you so much for hearing this bill. It seeks to support COPAL's initiatives across the state and their workers' center programming that supports primarily low-income migrant and Latinx workers with career planning, workforce training, education, workers' rights, advocacy, and much more. COPAL has a physical presence here in the Twin Cities, in Rochester, and in Mankato, and provides services to Latinas across Minnesota while engaging a network of over 39,000 community stakeholders throughout the state. They provide a variety of programs, including career exploration, job placement, educational opportunities such as GED, computer skills, financial literacy, and citizenship classes, labor protection support for workers who are victims of wage theft, and leadership development. My testifier today can expand a little bit more about what COPAL does and the services they provide and answer any specific questions about their organization.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. I'm Francisco Segovia. I am the Executive Director of Communities Organizing Power and Action for Latinos. Thank you. So I'm here tonight to request your support to invest in our community. With COVID-19, our community was set back. So many communities who were already vulnerable are in a much worse position right now. Latinos are one of those communities that were deeply impacted. During the time of COVID, we opened this service that we call the Navigators. So on a weekly basis, we had about 500 people calling us from across Minnesota, and about 300 of those 500 phone calls or conversations had to do with employment. We had people asking us, how do I regain employment, my company, reduce my hours so I don't have enough work, and so I need help with that. And so as a result of that, those many conversations, we decided to open this worker center. So that worker center is a model that is a little bit unique in the way where worker center is not only about placing people on jobs, but it's also about supporting people on their leadership and also to support people to regain wages that have lost as a result of wage theft. So it's a combination of those factors that were mentioned before. And so in that way, for instance, since the Worker Center opened in 2021, we have been able to work with about 150 people that have come to us due to wage theft issues. It can go from my employer doesn't pay me, or they misclassify me. We had a case, for instance, from Rochester where a group of women came to us saying that they were cleaning homes. They were treated as regular employees, but they were paid as a contractor people, and they didn't have the benefits of being a regular employee. So we work in cases like that, for instance, where people call us from across the state. And so far, we have helped about $250,000 in wage theft recovery. So people have been able to recover those wages. In so many other cases, we refer people to the city of Minneapolis, human rights departments, or other services that the state offer in what relates to wage theft. So So that's what the typical work of a worker center does. And in addition, we are seeking support to keep the helpline that we have. Again, people call us from across the state asking for support. We connect them with services, or we provide them if we have them available. So thank you for your time, and I'm here for to answer questions.
Discussion. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, could you be more specific about your workforce training? I know it sounds like you do a lot with helping folks, you know, go after some wage theft, and mm-hmm. that's good. We don't want to have anybody not get paid or be treated fairly. Sure. What specifically do you do with workforce training, more specific to this committee? What areas and focus and industries?
Mr. Segovia.
Chair. We're providing basic trainings like OSHA trainings, so I have to ensure that that you are protected at work. We provide computer skills, basic computer skills, and we also do GED. We have some people who comes to us and saying my employer is going to give me an opportunity if I have my GED. So those are some of the basic things that we do right now.
Representative Baker.
Thank you. Yeah, it's sounds like it's very entry level, then very broad based workforce. It's not into any certain kind of industries. I just know that the Latin community that I know are some of the hardest working people out there, and they deserve to have those opportunities and chances, because once you let them loose, I think they're just literally the hardest working people I know. We need to make sure that they have those tools and launched, but it's got to be a I'm hoping if it's more, when you say OSHA training, it's maybe some construction skills, or if you know, maybe you can partner with someone else. I'm just not suggesting to change what you're doing. I just know that that's really important to this industry, this committee, and our focus has to be on what are we doing to create more jobs for people, good paying jobs. So if somebody's getting their hours cut, there's a lot more employers that'll give them lots of hours. And right now is the time to be looking. We got to make sure they're trained and ready to go. So. Again, I wish you well. It's a lot of money, and the request is here, but we'll see how we kind of come out. But anyway, thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, closing remarks, Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much, Chair, and thank you all so much for hearing this bill. As spoken so eloquently by my colleague, we need to make sure everybody who is able and willing and capable of working has what they need to do so. So. Hope we can include this in your larger package.
I will renew my motion that House File 1042 be laid over for possible inclusion. Well, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion. Next is House File 2085, Representative Censor Mira. Representative Censor Mira, you have an amendment. No, you don't. Good. Good job. I like bills with amendments. Representative Censor Mira will renew her, will move that House File 2085 be laid over for possible inclusion. To your bill, Representative Censor Mira.
Thank you, Chair Zhang, Vice Chair Brand, and committee members. Happy to be before you today talking about House File 2085, which is an appropriation to Pillsbury United Communities, a nonprofit that has been working in the community in Minneapolis for 140 years. Pillsbury United Communities runs four community centers and six social enterprises in Minneapolis focused on underinvested individuals and families from lower socioeconomic status. They provide emergency services, stabilization support, and take on innovative projects that invest in long-term prosperity in our community and equity in our state. They have a sizable footprint in the education and workforce development spaces. Their examples of bodies of work include charter school authorization, in-school and out-of-school programming for middle and high school students, and 200 internships per year, and post-secondary work through a scholarship program. This funding would be a renewal of $500,000 going specifically towards their Career Pathways program. This is a workforce program specifically for underserved youth that provides the opportunity and the support to obtain industry certifications and high wage and high growth occupations in Minnesota while ensuring that students in the program have access to wraparound services to ensure they can be successful kind of building off of the conversation our committee had this morning, I believe that jobs for young people, getting them into careers, getting into employment pathways is critical, both because of the workforce shortages we have in our state, but also because we need to make sure that young people have productive and have productive things to do and are being brought into the community and having the wraparound services they need to be successful. I would now like to turn my time over to a testifier, a program participant who could speak more to the work that Pillsbury United Communities is doing. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello, my name is Jediah Steele. I am a Curtin student of Career Pathways underneath Pillsbury United Communities. Since I started Pillsbury United Communities, I realized a lot of things that were stereotyped upon me. I grew up on the north side of Minneapolis most of my life until I began to move to the suburbs due to how crime affected my family. When I moved away from the cities, I realized when I moved to the suburban areas that I was an outcast simply because of the skin of my color, the color of my skin. I gained this stereotype that many black and brown children end up getting because, for me, I didn't see college in my future simply because of the high cost and mindset of poverty that my family was still living in, even though we were in a better neighborhood. So for me, I was expected to work than to go to college. So the open door for Pillsbury United Communities helped me to get out of that stereotype and has provided me not only education, but also wraparound services such as transportation, as well as guidance to counseling and many more things. If it had not been for this program, I simply would not be where I am today. I would be that normal brown skin girl who would just wouldn't be further along in my future as I would imagine for me to be. So from the moment I joined the program, I have learned so many adulting skills that I needed that helped me to stand my own ground. This program has not only provided me with funds, but it has also provided me with basic adulting skills such as financial skills and being able to provide my own homing financial stability as well. But because this community has given back to me, I strive to get back to my community where I grew up from. And with the education that I received through Pillsbury United Communities, I plan to go into social work through the human services field that I am in. But not only that, every cent that I get, I am actually putting into a savings account to then be able to go to Howard University for psychology to also give back to my community in that aspect as well. Because there's not enough black women, black men who are able to implement back into the community exactly what we need, especially with being able to understand all the issues that happen within our community on North Minneapolis side. So my intent is to be able to open up my own one-stop shop self-care center to be able to give back to my community in that way of understanding and truly implementing a brighter future for our young people. Thank you.
Discussion, Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for this bill. Thank you to the testifier. Your words are so inspiring, and yes, we do need more social workers. We do need more black psychologists. I think the number is too small. And you wanting to further your career and to go to Howard University, that is a great dream. Keep on going. Sky's the limit. I'm super proud of the work that you're doing to just, you know, be an adult and do what you need to do and just envision a world where there are no barriers. That's wonderful. Thank you. And thank you for the bill.
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, I think I'm so inspired by you wanting to pay it forward. And you are, we don't hear that enough, especially from someone as young as you are and so ready for this great world ahead of you. And so we hear a lot of bills here. We have to think about what is our best use of our taxpayer dollars. It sounds like you feel like this Pillsbury project is really right for you and you're ready to go to it. You've had experience with it. Now you want to pay it back. We just need 1,000 more of you in those chairs to be able to pay it forward because you have to do this again for some other people down the road. That's what we're counting on. So thanks for inspiring all of us tonight. And You're a breath of fresh air, and that hair is amazing. I love it. So good job tonight, and this is exciting to hear that energy. So thank you.
Sounds like you have a co-op there.
Right.
Further discussion. Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair. I just had a quick question. Representative, it talks about the internships for 16 and 17-year-olds, and do you envision that? And I'm not sure PILBIT is for the trades, too, is my understanding.
Can I phone a friend from Pillsbury United to come up and support with that?
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is Vanan Murugesan. I'm the head of transformation at Pillsbury United Communities. I believe your question was about internship. I'm sorry, the baby was crying. Can you please repeat the question, please?
Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. The question was just regarding the internships for 16 and 17-year-olds. Mm-hmm. Does this program place them in the trade programs?
The program, part of the program is to place kids who are interested in the trade program to be part of it. The internship, though, will only occur after they are done with the program, and typically the 16 and 17 year old youths are participating in GED classes. So our primary target audience are kids right out of high school, so you're about 18 years old. We are targeting certificates that go for up to a year and only in jobs that are in high demand and high growth. So they have to meet both of these requirements. And we work with Minneapolis College and Dunwoody to identify those things. And so, but by the end of that 1 year period, you know, give or take 1 year, some kids take longer, some kids, Jediah is taking quicker. She's an excellent example of the program. They go into internship program. They go into an internship period. I don't think it's even allowable to get a 16 or 17 year old kid to the trade internship anywhere. So, rest assured, we will not do that.
Representative Zalesnikar.
No further questions. Thank you.
Further discussions. Seeing none, closing remarks. Representative Senator Mero.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, committee members. I think that our testifier, Jediah, said it best when she spoke about, you know, the classes that helped her and others learn about adulting. I think that there's a lot of both hard skills related to career, but also soft skills that all of us need to learn to become successful adults, and programs that can help us do that, especially for young people that don't feel like college is the right option, I think are things that we need to be investing in. I also really appreciated the testimony talking about, you know, an investment now comes back 5-10-fold in the future. I hope that within a few years we could potentially, you know, be talking about funding one-stop self-care shops on the north side. I think that that's a great idea, and I look forward to seeing where that goes. And I hope that committee members will consider this for possible inclusion in the omnibus. Thank you.
Representative Senator Murrow will renew her motion that House File 2085 be laid over for possible inclusion. Next is House File 1704, Representative Schumacher. And I believe you have an A1 amendment. If you could please explain your amendment, Mr. Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The A1 amendment fills in some of those dots that we all hate to have, and so completes the bill and makes it what we need it to be.
All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion carries. All right, two-year-old bill as amended. Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for granting this bill a hearing, and I can't wait to hear what Representative Baker has to say about my hair at the end of my testimony tonight. The bill in front of you is a way to compete with the Build Dakota program that we have just across the way from us. I live in Laverne, which is a community about 12 miles from the South Dakota border, and what the folks over in on that side of the world had decided to do was to make the two-year programs to the technical skill building types of programs free for students as long as they move to South Dakota, they do their programs there, and then they work for 3 to 5 years in the state. Well, those 3 to 5 years are pretty important for how you're going to lay down your roots in the rest of your life, and so we want to just try and compete with that. And so it was actually a group of local mayors, and you're getting a handout from those local mayors from the border communities there, just discussing on how they brought together their ideas on how to build this program out to be competitive. They connected with the Initiative Foundation. They connected with Minnesota West out there and the campuses that they have. And this is what they came up with. It was in the jobs bill that we weren't able to get across the finish line last year, and so we're hoping to get it done this year. Just a quick walkthrough of it. It establishes definitions for the purposes of creating this pilot program in Southwest Minnesota, putting scholarships together for the local workforce. This program is designed to work through DEED due to the effective workforce development relationship that already exists. Most efficient way to model this pilot is what we've found. And funds appropriated by the legislature would be awarded to the Southwest Initiative Foundation, and it defines the 7 Minnesota West colleges that the scholarships would be awarded to. Program eligibility includes the high-demand occupations, associate degree, diploma, or certificate programs as defined by the local workforce development board. The foundation and Minnesota West shall establish application processes and other guidelines. It's something that they've already agreed to do. And there is some commitment from the scholarship recipient as well. They must be enrolled in one of the identified programs offered at the Minnesota West College. They have to adhere to any local employer program requirements, commit to 3 years of full-time employment with a local employer, and if they drop out, the scholarship converts to a loan by the foundation. It requires the foundation of Minnesota West to develop relationships with local employers to maximize the effect of these public funds, and an annual report is required to be provided by the foundation back to the legislative committees, you all here. With me I have Mr. Scott Marcourt. He's the president of the Southwest Initiative Foundation and can offer further commentary.
Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Scott Marcourt, president of Southwest Initiative Foundation. We serve the 18 counties of rural Southwest Minnesota and the Upper Sioux community and Lower Sioux Indian community. Our regional centers are Worthington, Marshall, Hutchinson, and Representative Baker's backyard in Wilmer. Our region borders Iowa and South Dakota, as Representative Schumacher said, and many of my communities have 3-digit populations. Our vision is a region where all people thrive. We all know Minnesota has one of the highest labor force participation rates. At the same time, when unemployment in my respective 3 planning regions are still at historic lows of well under 2%. As Representative Schumacher said, the Build Dakota Scholarship Fund is recruiting and targeting and working very hard to reach the students in my border counties and in our communities. Wasn't that long ago that one of those postcards showed up in my mailbox because I have a student too. They're very aggressive. $70 million has been put into the fund so far, $50 million in the first tranche and additional 20. With that $50 million, according to South Dakota's data, 1,900 students at least have graduated debt-free from a South Dakota technical school. And my guess is a good chunk of them are still residing in South Dakota and not being the workforce that we need in Southwest Minnesota and throughout the state. We want to be the trusted partner to deliver this, and we're hopeful that it's funded. We are grateful for the support and trust that the state of Minnesota has given us since our inception in 1986. Our collaboration with the DEED most recently has helped put out millions of dollars in all of the various pandemic relief programs as our entrepreneurs work tirelessly to navigate the unknowns and economic impacts of the pandemic. Small business relief grants, loan guarantees, Main Street, COVID grants, and now Main Street economic revitalization. We have the staff, we have the systems and the local relationships to do this effectively and efficiently and prudently. We manage a number of scholarship funds for our community foundation and affiliate partners, and the idea of converting it to a loan if necessary is not new space for us because we do business finance daily. So we believe we have the intermediary that can get the money deployed ASAP with a minimal ramp-up time, and to ensure that marginalized and underserved people are reached and that barriers are mitigated. We believe this would definitely leverage our years of advancing economic development and multi-sector collaboration. As Representative Schumacher said, this was developed very collaboratively. Employer input, workforce boards, Minnesota West, a number of community partners. I told this story a couple of weeks ago to the convening of the Chamber of Commerce executives and just really celebrated how this was such an inclusive journey that brought us to this bill, and we're hopeful that it is funded this year. And I'll just close, Mr. Chair and members, with that. It's data-driven. There's some serious analytics that will go into how folks are selected, how programs are prioritized to ensure that data drives this so that reporting and diligent analysis afterwards is available. So we're grateful for the consideration. We're very hopeful that this is funded, and we look forward to having a lot of folks graduate from Minnesota West and go to work in greater Minnesota, throughout Minnesota, instead of across the state line. So, thank you.
Discussion. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Schumacher, and or to Mr. Marquardt, too. Am I missing it, but do I see anything about where the in-demand jobs are? Is there a focus on certain industries? Or is that pretty broad with the college offerings? Because this is a great program. We've got to compete with our neighbors across the border, and they're taking people away from us with these other things that they're forcing us. So this is a must do, folks. This is a must do for rural Minnesota in some of the largest areas that are shrinking in Minnesota. But I'm just curious about the in demand. What does that mean?
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker. Yes,
Mr. Marquardt.
Thank you. A key part of this is that the Workforce Board will work with Minnesota Rest to identify those. The bill doesn't identify it.
Okay.
Representative Baker, that's going to be looked at actually on an annual basis to ensure things are changing. The preliminary analysis, certainly in the healthcare space, we believe manufacturing, mechatronics, machinists, so certainly some of, the higher demand programs at the technical colleges, but we are going to look at this annually because we could see it fluxing if one of our plants adds 300-400 people. We need to know what that means or would like to add it. So should be done annually.
Representative Baker.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I just want to emphasize this part of the state doesn't ask for much. This is one that I think really needs to be looked at when we look at our final bill. I think this pilot project, and I know this organization, the Southwest Initiative Foundations and their work there, They are data wonks. They are all over this. They do it because they know what's going to work, and they study it. I like your idea about staying nimble. The industries can be changing, too. So I really do hope this committee really supports this. So thank you for bringing it forward.
Representative Weems.
Thank you, Chair Jong. Thank you, Representative Schumacher and Mr. Marquardt. I'm sort of echoing Representative Baker. But to a certain extent, what I'm impressed with is the amount of analysis that you've done to understand what the job market is and what the youth that are in southwestern Minnesota, where they're going. I'm pretty pissed off at South Dakota. But I think you guys are taking their plan and you're going to turn it around against them. And I'd like you to just maybe talk a little bit about what are the elements of that plan that you guys adopted.
Mr. Marquardt.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. One of the largest infusions in the South Dakota plan was a large gift from a philanthropist and business person, Mr. Sanford. And, we're not looking for a specific target in that space, but the corollary that we think we're adopting is why I believe this also would involve some tax committee work is tax credit for employers, so employer engagement. Instead of, philanthropist XYZ partnering with the state of South Dakota, we're going to try to use tax benefit in it so that there's some incentive to have employer infusion into this in addition to the public dollars. So I think that public-private partnership was a key piece of it. Also, that it's not just finish your college and take off, that there's that committing to 3 years of full-time employment. We think the three-year benchmark in South Dakota really makes sense. Having the high-demand occupations. South Dakota's model, just I think based on population, it's all four of their technical schools, Mitchell, Sioux Falls, Watertown, and one out West River. Because this is a pilot, we're looking at Minnesota West, but they have multiple campuses. So that's a slightly different thing, but we believe that because of the pilot nature, we'd rather start with one and then learn and grow from that space perspective. So I'd say, again, the top three would be the 3 years, the public-private partnership, and trying to use analytics.
Representative?
One follow-up, Chairman?
Representative Weems.
And I promise I won't ask any more questions.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Marquardt and Representative Schumacher. I am really encouraged that this is just a one-time appropriation of $700,000 so that you guys can do the beta test on how this works and then report back to us. Because this could be a model for other communities that are on the border and even here in the metro area. If I'm doing my math correctly with 700 grand, that's 70 potential students that would be used or at the $10,000 mark, or is there a different number that you guys are using in this test bed?
Mr. Markert, Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Weens. We do anticipate it will be more than that. That would be if it was total state share with that. But because we actually have the employers have some skin in the game too, we're going to be able to serve a lot more students and keep a lot more home than what would otherwise be.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nielsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Mr. Markort and Representative Schumacher. Thank you for this bill, and we've got a somewhat similar program with Pine Tech and Community College in Pine City, Minnesota. There's a foundation that has it started out with some of the area schools offering scholarships to the graduating seniors out of a couple areas, and then through some of the federal funding, through I don't know if it was CARES or ARPA or what, our county board has extended that to all schools in Pine County. So up, I think the graduates through this year will be able to go, those that choose to, be able to go to Pine Tech and Community College and be able to get, you know, careers, you know, there's skills that are important for our community. And, you know, it's one of the few colleges in the state that has had a growth in enrollees over the last probably about 15 years. You know, most colleges have had a decline, and it's one of those that has had consistent, and I believe it's 45% growth over the last 15 years. So it's been very steady, and I don't know if you have met with Joe Mulford, the president there, and, you know, just kind of seen how it works there. But I think, you know, opportunities like this are so crucially important. And, you know, and I think also, and I don't know if it's, you know, maybe part of this bill here, but, you know, being able to engage in some with our students in high school and having some of the exposure to what careers are out there, because I think, you know, there's a lot of bills that we're hearing here that are in many ways they're remediation. They're, you know, the people that didn't realize, you know, they've gotten post high school and don't know what to do. Maybe they're in a transition phase of a career. You know, we just, right before you, we heard of a testimony of somebody really thinking that college was out of the question because of their socioeconomic backgrounds. And I think that, you know, being able to, you know, expose students to the possibilities that are out there are so important. And you know, being able to have that, and I you know, support this, and I, you know, hope that, you know, there can be more opportunities like this going forward. And I think to Representative Schumacher, the hair is lacking a little bit, so.
Ouch. Ouch. Representative Schumacher?
I can't pick myself off the floor off that last comment, but it's true. And I think in Southwest Minnesota, what's a little more unique with the struggles that our students have is that when they get through high school, they think Twin Cities, they have the jobs, so I got to go there, or Sioux Falls, because they're going to pay for my school. And so the last option I would have is here, and we can answer both of those with this. And I'll just do my wrap up too, as long as there's no other questions, and just say, you know, I'm in retail as a professional, and I know it's a lot cheaper to keep the customers I have than to go out and get new ones. And so I think the same thing happens with our workforce. It's going to be much more affordable from the state and from the local economy perspective to keep our local students local than to try and recruit new people to come to the area. So I ask you again for your support, and thank you for the hearing.
I will renew my motion to House Bill 1704 as the amendment be laid over for possible inclusion. Next bill is House Bill 1944, Representative Petersburg. Do you have an amendment? No, you don't. Good job. Okay. I will move that House Bill 1944 be laid over for possible inclusion. Welcome to committee, Representative Petersburg, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for keeping the two best bills last. I appreciate that. I also appreciate you taking the time to hear these bills. That's very important for us, and thank you for the committee for hearing it. These two bills that I have actually kind of work very well together, and it's this situation that we have in front of you is about workforce development. Many years ago, Owatonna and the area lost its workforce development location and all of that, and it had to go regionally different places. And so we've been working at trying to maintain that and keep that in the Owatonna area. We're one of the largest towns of our size in Owatonna that didn't have one. And so we've been working with that, and I have Jenny Rittman here next to me, who is the head of the Workforce Development Incorporation. And so she's going to testify about the importance of this, what has been done in the past few years, and I will turn it over to her, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to committee again, Ms. Rittman. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
All right. Good evening again, Mr. Chairman and committee members, and thank you again for this opportunity to speak with you. My name is Ginny Rittman, and I'm the executive director for WDI, as you heard earlier, and we are a nonprofit organization providing employment and training services in the 10-county area of southeast Minnesota. Today, I represent the Workforce Development Board, Steele County residents, career seekers, local businesses, and our community partners. We were thrilled to reopen our Steele County Workforce Development Office in 2021, and we hope to keep these services available to serve the critical needs of our region. The Owatonna Workforce Center closed its doors to the public in April of 2018. Owatonna was the only community in Minnesota with a population of over 20,000 that didn't have a career force. Due to shrinking public funding resources, we were forced to close. Knowing that the employers in Steele County are paying into this important workforce development tax, our businesses and community partners were incredibly disappointed. In 2021, we were fortunate to receive a direct appropriation to reopen our doors, which we did later that year on a minor budget of $275,000. Since that time, in just over a year's time, we've served over 300 career seekers and over 200 employers, helping employers find talent and providing training and support services to help career seekers access opportunities. Our cost per participant is $1,328, and our success rate into employment and training has been 92%. We're partnered with organizations such as Owatonna Chamber and the United Way. We've created a career-centered initiative in Steele County schools called Steele Co Works. This program exposes our Steele County youth to job shadowing, internships, work experience, and part-time employment. We also have multiple career pathways programs for youth and adults, providing that connection for our career seekers to access opportunities and for employers to access talent. Our largest key industry sector is manufacturing, and we've developed a successful training program into advanced manufacturing during this short time in partnership with our local college and adult basic education. In addition, we've been able to serve a 34% diverse workforce and provide a wage gain of $4 per hour with an average wage at employment of $20 per hour. At a time when we are experiencing a labor workforce shortage, the ability to collaborate and look to best practices is vital. We are able to leverage our programs, services, and relationships with businesses and educators to bring even more career pathway training options to Steele County residents, and we have the proven strategies that can build career pathways for anyone in need. We have numerous matching and braided funding streams, yet this appropriation is critical for us to continue these services to the residents of Steele County. As you can see from your handout, we have unique and impactful programs that are truly moving the needle to addressing the workforce challenges of our region. And we were able to stand these up, sign on key stakeholders, develop, and provide programming incredibly quickly after receiving our allocation. I would now love for you to hear from one of our students if there's time. Matt Beck is a participant in one of our programs. However, he's not on the testifying list as he was able to just join us last minute. So I can either read his testimony, which is less than 2 minutes, or you can hear from him directly. Mr. Chairman, which would you prefer?
I want to hear from him directly.
All right. So with that, I'd like to introduce Matthew Beck. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And while he's coming, Mr. Chair, if I may continue just for a minute.
Go ahead.
One of the things that I think there's a benefit here is Owatonna has a growing industry and a growing programs, and we have really low unemployment, but we have so many jobs available. We are trying to develop situations in which people actually grow their skills to become higher paying jobs and moving forward. So trying, rather than being underemployed, this opportunity is something in which it really can grow. And with that, I'll turn it over to Matt.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Matthew Beck. I graduated from Owatonna High School last year, and I am currently working full-time as a welder at Advanced Coil Technology in Owatonna. I'm going to briefly tell you how workforce development in Steele County has made an impact in my life. I knew I was interested in a hands-on job after high school. I liked working on cars, and I liked the welding class I took, but I was lost on what to do to make those interests into a job. In the fall of my senior year, a career planner through the Steele Co-Works program with workforce development, her name was Megan. She came into one of my classes and said she can help connect students to employers and learn about careers. She connected me with a diesel mechanic where I did a paid work experience, and I learned it wasn't the career path for me. I know I was still interested in welding, so I decided to explore that further, and Megan set me up with a tour at Advanced Coil, and I later job shadowed with a few of the welders. I quickly realized I wanted to work there. I was hired on through a work experience program at Workforce Development that was approved by Youth Skills Training, was a paid to work at Advanced Coil and gain experience. Advanced Coil requires employees to have a welding certificate, so I toured the welding program at South Central College with Megan. She also helped me through the process of applying to the college. I was accepted into the program, and my tuition was paid in full through the Advanced Manufacturing Grant. I continued to work at Advanced Coil part-time throughout college and was hired on into a full-time role after I completed my welding certificate. If it wasn't for workforce development, I wouldn't have been able to explore my career interests before committing to a career. I also wouldn't have been able to go to college without taking out loans and start a career that I can see myself staying at long term. I am 18 years old, have no college debt, enjoy my job, and I am making more money than most of my friends. I am grateful for the support I received from the Steele County Workforce Development Office, and I want more students to have the same opportunities that I had. I can honestly say I don't know where I would be if it wasn't for Megan and Workforce Development in Steele County. Thank you for your time and allowing me to share my story.
Thank you, Mr. Beck, for sharing your story. Discussion. Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. Representative Peterson, I have a question. I'm on the website for it. Okay, how does that work? So you have a member board, but then yet you collaborate with the counties. How does that work?
Ms. Rittman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. Can you repeat the question? How does it work with the county
board? Right. You have your member board, your workforce development board, and then there's a joint powers with several counties. How does that work together?
Ms. Rittman.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. So under the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Law, which is a federal law, that is what we operate under, and under that law we are required to be governed by what's called a joint powers board. And our joint powers board is made up of one county commissioner from each of the 10 counties that we serve. Mm-hmm. So our workforce development board and our joint powers board together govern Workforce Development, Inc. and our programs and services in Southeast Minnesota.
Representative Harder.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that. This sounds like a good program to get our youth in jobs rather than many don't want to have a four-year college, which is fine. And so this is another opportunity for outstate or greater Minnesota for their opportunities. So thank you for that.
Further discussion. Seeing closing statement, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for committee hearing this. We just ask you to consider this appropriation so that we can continue the program that we believe is very successful and has a great impact to the people in our community. Thank you.
I will renew my motion on House File 1944. Be laid over for possible inclusion. Next bill, House File 1011. I will move that House File 1011 be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Petersburg, to your bill and the final bill in committee.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, again. So this, I would say, is probably the bill that enhances what you just heard before. Owatonna was the community of Owatonna actually decided to spend lots of money and build a brand new high school. And with that brand new high school comes great opportunities for us to advance technical skills to skill levels that allow people to get into jobs right away. And working with Riverland Technical College, that's also in Owatonna, it gives us a great opportunity to provide for additional ability for kids, young adults, to get the skills needed to go right into jobs that are high-paying, whether they're blue-collar or white-collar. It really gives a great opportunity for them to grow and go beyond this. And so this bill was actually in last year's bill that obviously for a lot of us know didn't make it across the finish line. But we're here at another time to ask for the funding to get this program up and starting. So bulk of it's going to be on equipment and other things to get both the technical college as well as the high school up to speed in workforce development. And with that, I have Brad Myers here from the Chamber of Commerce.
Welcome to committee, Mr. Meyer. Please identify yourself for record. Proceed.
Thank you. Brad Meyer, I'm president of the Owatonna Area Chamber of Commerce and Tourism. Our foundation would be the fiscal agent for this particular project. Thanks for listening to us. I just want to quickly outline our ambition for growth in Owatonna and how this plays into it. We're a community of 27,000 people straight south on I-35, about 50 miles. 30% of our workforce is in manufacturing. We have about 1,500 positions open as we sit here today, and we want to grow as a community. As Representative Petersburg said, we're building a brand new high school, $23 million, are privately funded, one of the largest in the state of Minnesota, possibly in the country. So we're committed to education. We just invested $30 million in public and private financing in our downtown to make it a better place. We've put up over 600 housing units over the last 3 to 4 years, and we're engaging in a community-wide branding initiative to market our community and tell our great story. We're also focusing on training of our high school students, and we need them to understand what opportunities they have in our community. We're doing that through Youth Skills Training Program through the state of Minnesota, Career Pathways through Owatonna High School, the Steel Co. Works Program, which we're a partner with WDI in the United Way, and also the workforce development location that you just heard about being continue to stay open in our community. So one of the next big issues is higher education, and our presence in Owatonna for higher education needs to be expanded and improved, and we want to do that with our partner, Riverland Community College. So that brings us to Learn to Earn. We're asking for $1 million for three things: needs assessment for higher education, mechatronics equipment in the new OHS, and Riverland Community College to provide a pathway for our industry, and an Owatonna Opportunity Scholarship, which essentially it helps fund the higher education while the student is both part-time school, part-time work. The Chamber would be the partner working in the middle of this to make sure our educational partners are tied in with what our business partners are looking for through this program. And the career pathway at the high school is ready to jump in on this. Riverland Community College has their advanced manufacturing pathway ready to go. We just need to get this equipment up and running. So we think it's an important model and a next step in the growth of our community, and we'd love your help with that. Thank you.
Discussions. Yeah, you gotta have a question.
I have a question. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Great bill. Representative Petersburg, thank you very much. Our friends in Owatonna are getting pretty creative down there. This is exciting. That high school sounds really exciting, and you guys are really, again, like we have seen here in many committees, you know, in many presentations over the last few nights, days, you know, you're thinking outside the box. So thank you for that. I'm excited to support this bill. I really hope it makes it to that final finish line as well like it did last year. Representative Petersburg, thanks for your work on this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Sensenmuir.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. I also think this is a really innovative and exciting idea. I guess my question is, you know, I was on the Education Finance Committee, and I could see, you know, this proposal is dealing with, you know, info programming. It looks like, you know, investments in equipment that students would use in schools. I guess why should this go through workforce rather than education finance? Thank you.
Or Representative Petersburg.
You know, I'm not part of leadership, and leadership has signed it here. So I think you have a good point. It could go there, and I think last year it did go through there at least one stage. But I think because it deals more heavily with workforce and not education, maybe the chairs decided that way. I don't know. Good point.
Representative Sensenmayer?
That just gives me some creative ideas for supporting Minneapolis public schools. Thank you.
Further discussion. Further discussion. I know you got a question, Representative Nelson. No?
Good to go.
I'm good.
All right, closing remarks.
Thank you. Thank you again, Mr. Chair. And I do have to apologize. I think I may have dropped the ball. We did have a handout. I did send it by email just tonight when I saw it wasn't here to the committee administrator. So hopefully he'll get that sent out electronically to everybody as well. That kind of lays out along with some of the thoughts about where the costs are. Again, I apologize for dropping that. But thank you for hearing this. I think this is a great combination of bills that really allows, as an example to the rest of the state, how we can increase our workforce development for those that just aren't going to go to a four-year college, aren't going to go maybe to trade schools. But it gives us an opportunity to really expand that, because the opportunity for high-paying jobs, blue-collar, white-collar, don't necessarily have to go traditionally. They can also be creative, and this is our attempt to do so. So, again, thank you for hearing it, and I appreciate your support.
I will renew my motion. The House Bill 10 and 11 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Members, we are done here. We will come back Friday afternoon for 4 hours. And then next week, we will likely have another evening hearing Wednesday. And if my intention is to hear all the bills in our procession, and then we will work on the omnibus bill before deadline is over. And so with that said, the committee is representing.
Just a quick question. Was the potential next week's schedule sent out already to our LAs yet or not? Okay, we want to get that on our schedule.
Our staff is out yet.
Okay. Okay, no worries.
We'll make sure that's sent.
Thanks for the announcement tonight. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Any questions? All right, committee's adjourned.